using free speech to free minds. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's Monday, the 19th of July, year of our Lord, 2021, day 492 of America Held Hostage. Today we're going to take a look at the new variant that is manifesting itself everywhere. That is the Biden administration essentially becoming the South African variant of Marxism. Yeah, that South African variant. It is Marxism, it is Big Brotherism, and the mask has come off of that agenda even as they're putting the mask back on, even on the vaccinated. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Yes, we have the former FDA commissioner, Scott Gottlieb, who is now on the board of Pfizer, is not happy about the masks either. As a matter of fact, it's a testimony to the fact that they have no confidence in the vaccine whatsoever. And many commentators on what is now really the news, all of the late-night commentators, they have become the primary news source because it really has become satire. Even they were questioning that. And we also have the inventor of the mRNA vaccine who has come out in opposition to this and says he believes that this is very dangerous, untested technology. He now is looking at the same information everybody else is coming out of Israel. The fact that Israel, that jumped into the Pfizer vaccine more quickly than anybody else, they were more motivated to get their population vaccinated than any other country. So they jumped to the front of the line, and now they're at the front of the line in terms of a resurgence, and 40% of the people that are being brought in are people who have been vaccinated versus 1% of the people who have been non-vaccinated. So that's a pretty big differential. And so as he's saying, he believes that as you look at this data, this fellow who, again, is the inventor of the mRNA, believes that this COVID surge is coming from the mRNA vaccines. But as I said, it really is satire, and of course that's where we get our news. And so when I saw this headline, I thought that this was satire, but it's not the Babylon Bee. It's actually true. This is coming out of Australia. Shark advocates there, and they do have shark advocates in Australia. That's the first part of it that looks like a joke. They want to rename shark attacks interactions. Shark interactions, you know, because sharks are misunderstood. These are marine experts and advocates for sharks. They said sharks are being, quote, unfairly stigmatized as deliberate killers. It's just part of their sin nature. that's what they do. If people don't want to use the word interaction, the group has suggested other alternatives like negative encounter. Oh, man, you took off my leg. That was really negative. Incident or just simply bites. Yeah. And these interactions are mostly peaceful, except that the people end up mostly in pieces. They just take pieces of you. And they, in defending the sharks, they pointed out, this is a person who is a University of Sydney language researcher who has a hyphenated last name. Christopher Pepin Neff. Whenever you see some guy with a hyphenated last name, you know where he's coming from. He says, shark attack is a lie. It's a lie. Didn't happen. I mean, I don't know if you saw that horrifying story about the people who went out on a, they chartered a boat and went out on a cruise. Yeah, there is that picture of Roy Scheider and Jaws there. But they, the true story, I didn't talk about it because it really was not the focus of the key news. But quite frankly, this is always what they do. They manipulate language. It's not just gender. It's everything. The left always manipulates everything. Even, the, you know, calling conservatives red. Red was always the color of, and still is, the color of Marxist revolutionaries. Everything is to disguise what they are doing, to project what they do onto other people, and to take anything that is positive for themselves, like the term liberal. Liberal used to mean people who believed in liberty, people who wanted you to be liberated, and that meant every aspect of your life, from free speech to being economic freedom and all the rest of this stuff. But that changed, because that's what the liberals do. Anything positive, they steal. Anything negative, they throw on you. And the shark story that I was referring to, these people chartered a boat on the East Coast, and they had a storm. The tiny minnow was tossed, so to speak, but they didn't make it to Gilligan's Island. The crew was drunk, and I forget what happened to the crew. Probably the same thing that happened to the people on the boat. Some of them, the passengers, one of them, had enough sense to inflate a dinghy, and the passengers got on, and it was, if I recall, it was three men and a couple of women. One of the women was badly injured with a in the capsizing of the boat, had a massive gash on her leg, and that pulled in the sharks, who, you know, it was just, they came in for an interaction. And as they scrambled into the dinghy, the sharks continued to ram the dinghy like something out of Jaws. One of them grabbed one of the ropes and took it on a joyride. Again, the image that comes to mind is Moby Dick, except he hadn't been harpooned. He just took the raft. And what happened over a few days was that two of the individuals, as they did not have any water, two of the individuals couldn't stand anymore, and they drank salt water. That made them delirious. And one by one, they made comments like, well, I'm going to go get some coffee or whatever, and they stepped off the raft, and that was when the sharks got them. And I took him out. And the lady who had the leg infection, she became delirious and died from the infection. And then, as they thought all was lost, they spotted a Russian trawler or something like a fishing boat or something like that that picked them up and rescued them. But they had basically given up hope. But, you know, it was just an interaction. No big deal, right? Watching the people there being eaten alive one at a time as the sharks were ramming their raft and following them persistently. Shark attack is a lie, said Pepin Neff. A majority of what people call attacks are merely nips and minor injuries from smaller sharks. That's right. And we know that they're misunderstood. They're also economically deprived. It's poor sharks. So he said they used to be called shark accidents before attack came in the 1930s. And, you know, when we talk about the response to the lockdown, I've used the example about shark attacks because last summer we had a shark attack. I think it was last summer in the middle of this lockdown. Somebody got out in the ocean, got attacked by a shark in California, and they shut down a couple of miles of the beach. And I said, well, if they were to take the same approach that they've done to the pandemic, they would shut down the entire West Coast and the East Coast and the Gulf of Mexico if one person was attacked by a shark, right? That would be the way, that would be the appropriate approach according to Fauci. We're not going to have a single shark attack. That means nobody gets in the water except, you know, Fauci if he wants to go. New South Wales and Australia has already started. And they said, and this is for real. This is also not a satire. I'm not reading the Babylon Bee here. This is for real. New South Wales, the Department of Primary Industries, has started a shark survivors support group. Guess what they called it? Bite Club. Bite Club. The first rule of Bite Club is you don't talk about sharks. To identify more sensitive vocabulary to describe, quote, an audience with a shark. An audience with a shark. Now, that's pretty amazing. Sharks don't have hands, so if they want to explore something, they just mouth it. Very rarely are humans consumed by sharks. That's like they just rip a limb and here and there off and you bleed out. Unbelievable. U.S.-backed tech is restoring the Internet to more than 1 million Cubans amid uprisings against the government. And I looked at this and I thought, wow, what kind of technology have they given them here? And as I start to read this, it says the Biden administration is finding ways to provide anti-censorship tools to Cubans. And they've got something that is powered by a company called Siphon, P-S-I-P-H-O-N. So I thought, wow, what is this amazing technology? 1.389 million daily unique users access the open web from Cuba through Siphon Network. Internet is on, and circumvention tools are working, tweeted out the company. So as you read this article, you find out that Siphon is using proxy servers. What? That's not even the level of a VPN. You know, a VPN that you can, any of us can get a VPN, and people frequently do. A virtual private network is an app and software that's going to encrypt, not just put it on a anonymous server or something. So a proxy server is not even giving you the level of protection that a VPN is doing. What is the issue with this? Frankly, this is another one of these stories that just has me scratching my head. When I saw that they had shut down the Internet in Cuba, I assumed that they had just used the rubber hose method just to go in and take over any of the Internet companies and just shut it down physically, you know, pull the plug out from the switching equipment, right? Power it off, right? Power it off. And I think that is coming. I think that is coming with CyberPolygon. To make sure that they restrict us. When we look at what is happening with these travel restrictions that are being reimposed in Australia, absolutely astonishing that you've got about 34,000 Australians trying to get back home, and they can't because they're rationing out just a couple of hundred flights. And it just becomes this logistical nightmare. It's almost like a lottery trying to get a ticket to get back home. But, of course, the celebrities are just coming and going freely. There was a sports team, same thing. But all these Hollywood celebrities, I mean, the most ridiculous thing is this Big Brother, celebrity Big Brother that they have going on there. And, they had Caitlyn Jenner, as they call him, Bruce Jenner, is what I call him. He gets in to do that disgusting show. And because, you know, Big Brother is very important. It's always been, in my opinion, a big selling feature for people turning their lives over to social media for this kind of voyeuristic exhibitionism, if you will. It feeds both sides of this. And, of course, you know, people are watching these celebrities or these people who have no accomplishments in their life just being voyeurs. And those people are being exhibitionists, but they become celebrities. They've done nothing at all in their life, except to become an exhibitionist. And because of all these voyeurs watching them, they become famous. They become a celebrity. And so then they kind of turn it around and they take people like Bruce Jenner and put him on. And all of this, I think, was preparation for people wanting to get onto social media, wanting to have followers. It's like if these people can become celebrities, they have no talent, no knowledge, no accomplishments, nothing. Nothing to say, nothing. But they become celebrities. I could do the same thing on social media as well. And, of course, social media is Big Brother, looking at everything that you're doing. It is your life log, which is what they called it before they shut that down and started in funneling money to Facebook. And so we're going to talk about the speech issues today that have come up about social media. By the way, I also want to talk about what happened with the Supreme Court and DACA. It's pretty amazing to me how corrupt that whole system is, but what is behind it? And when I talk about this, I'm going to lay this out, hopefully, so people left and right will really understand what's going on here. Because it doesn't, apart from the policy is not the big issue here anymore. It's judicial supremacy and the fact that you create this chaos because we've allowed federal judges at every level to act as if they're dictators. Whatever they say is law. And so everybody, the president, scrambling because one federal judge somewhere said something. And again, you know, I agree with his opinion. But the impact that one federal judge's opinion has is absolutely insane. But it's nothing compared to what the Supreme Court has. And so we're going to talk about that. Why did the Supreme Court tell Trump that he couldn't get rid of an executive order from the previous president? What was the rationale for that from the Roberts Supreme Court? And then why did this judge shut it down? And now what is going to happen? All of that, as well as a lot of people are asking what's going on with two of the three Trump appointments. What is happening with all of these surprisingly, the surprising new consensus in the Supreme Court over many issues? It harkens back, I think, to the Supreme Court has already done this type of thing. I haven't seen anybody in any of the articles harken back to how the Supreme Court responded the first time you had a president and a party saying that they were going to pack the Supreme Court, and that was under FDR. So we'll take a look at that in a moment. But I want to finish the headline news. Amazon is winning FCC approval for a radar device to monitor your sleep. what happens if, and again, when we talk about radar, it's probably something like the speed radar or something, I guess, to measure the speed of your snores. K-band, Ka-band. I'm going to have to make sure that I've got my radar detector turned off or it'll be keeping me awake all night. Yeah, the FCC approval document here. Amazon wants to operate a radar sensor, you know, because of health. They want to do things to they're moving into the health industry in the same way that Amazon and a lot of these electronic device companies are moving. And that should, that is the real scary thing about all of this. I've talked many times to a goat tree about the Internet of Things and how easy it is to hack those, not just to hack into cars, they illustrate that, or to hack into voting machines. That is child's play, literally. But also to hack into medical devices, pacemakers and things like that, or even at a different level into a hospital. We should be very concerned about this, and we should also be very concerned about the big tech people who will do any kind of authoritarian moves in order to make money. I do not want to have them knowing anything about my health or having any involvement with any devices or anything else. I think you ought to be very, very concerned about that whole Internet of Things aspect. Austria is investigating reported Havana syndrome cases among U.S. envoys. And again, when we look at the constant barrage of all these different frequency spectrum that we're subjected to, whether it's radar or whether it is Wi-Fi that we have in our homes, whether it's smart meters or whether it's 5G or cell phones or on and on and on. I mean, it is, they're just adding new things all the time and putting them in close proximity to us. I don't really know if you are going to be sleeping with that thing right next to you. I know that I sleep, I don't sleep very well if I don't put my phone in airplane mode. And a lot of people have even more sensitivity to that. We don't really know what the biological effects of this stuff are because they don't want us to look at it. You know, we've had some research that's shown that there is a much, much higher incident of brain cancer, brain tumors, in people who use their phones over a certain period of time and hold them up next to their head. That is obvious, and we've seen clusters of cancer in schools where they put antennas, and yet now they're incentivizing and even mandating that these 5G antennas are going to be placed everywhere. So we should be very concerned about that. And the Havana syndrome is at the center of all that. Going back 5 or 6 years ago, as soon as they started saying they heard clicks, I said, well, that's the Fry effect, Alan Fry. He was the only person that has actually done any of this stuff. He worked for the Navy. He published his research. And he said, just as we have microwave radiation can create heat at certain frequencies, then also he noticed that at other frequencies, you would hear it as clicks. He called it the Fry effect. And so we don't know, and they possibly do know, but they're not telling us, and they don't want us to know what the biological effects of these different things are, but it's not just the biological effects. We know what the effects are going to be in terms of monitoring and controlling us, and that in and of itself is provable. It is obvious. It's not speculation whatsoever. I mean, we can look at the stuff about the biological effects and say, well, that's suspicious, it ought to be tested, and of course they're not going to test it any more than they're going to test the Trump shots that were sent around the world. And Trump is pushing the 5G stuff, and their paranoia about China manufacturing the equipment tells you everything that you need to know about how dangerous this is going to be. Whoever controls that has the high ground. That has high ground to control other nations and to control people. Whoever controls this 5G network, because that's what this is. It is a control grid. They won't admit that, but the fact that they're fighting so hard to stop China from having that high ground tells you everything that you need to know about it. But of course, there's many other indications. We know exactly what they're using it for. Anyway, this is happening now in Vienna, as they point out in this article from Reuters. Once the center of Cold War intrigue, Vienna is now home to several UN agencies. That's why this is happening. There's no longer, I guess, the Cold War, at least you saw portrayed in Vienna with the Third Man, if you remember that Orson Welles cotton film. Anyway, California is now proposing new social justice math framework. As one person said, it would demathematize math. It would be 2 plus 2 equals 5. They don't want to teach math. They want to teach other things. The purpose of government schools is not to educate. Not at all. It's not to teach Johnny how to read. Why can't Johnny read was a classic question that we'd have. And I've been saying for decades, that's not the purpose of the schools. It is not to the schools have not failed. The schools have succeeded in their purpose. And you can see the end result, the product of the school systems on the streets of Portland and Seattle. The hatred, the violence, the revolution. California is on the verge of politicizing K-12 math in a potentially disastrous way. And they said the postponement of this by the school board, they've heard loud messages very clearly. They said the framework, quote, encourages focusing on contributions that historically marginalized people have made in math, rather than on the contributions themselves, which have been essential to the academic discipline of mathematics. In other words, we're going to use this to elevate critical race theory and talk about people of color rather than actually having them understand what this is. You know, for the longest time, if you look at the Wizard of Oz, the very end ceremony, one of my favorite scenes was the Scarecrow getting the doctor of Thankology for the wizard. He puts the medal on him and he goes, oh, well, the square root of two sides is equal to the sum of the square root of two sides is equal to the square root of the other side in an isosceles triangle. And it's like, well, that's not anything. That's not even right. It's a stupid paraphrase of the Pythagorean theorem, which is the foundation of trigonometry, right-angled triangles, not isosceles triangles. And for the longest time, I thought, do these people in Hollywood not know? And then I started to think that they did that deliberately as a joke because their audience in the 1930s would have known what the Pythagorean theorem was. All right, they would have known a squared plus b squared equals c squared, where c squared is the hypotenuse. They would have understood that. They would have had trigonometry. They had an education. It's only now that just goes over everybody's head for the most part. We don't even have the frame of reference to get that joke. So that's what they want to do to math in California, of course. One person said, I consider myself a social justice warrior, of course, in California. Limiting access to advanced mathematics is not the way to address social inequity. We believe infusing mathematics with political rhetoric is alien to mathematics as a discipline and will do lasting damage, including making math dramatically harder for students whose first language is not English. Yeah, say it's going to, you know, hurt the people who have come here illegally more than anybody else. Women and minorities will be hardest hit with this. They express support for the new math framework because it is infused with concepts of equity. That's what it's all about. It's all about equity and feeling good about yourself. No, no, no. We need to raise a generation of modern major generals who are filled with information, vegetable and mineral, and know many cheerful facts about square the hypotenuse. Public schools are broken. Don't send your kids there, says WND. And again, I agree with all their critiques of what is happening in the public school. They point out, as I did last week, that if you think that you're going to stop these this Marxist brigade, this fifth column that is teaching your kids, you're not going to do it with any laws. They're not going to obey the laws. 5,000 teachers openly signed a pledge to defy any prohibition of teaching critical race theory. Are one of those teachers teaching your kids or your grandkids? Do you know? Do you know anything about the people teaching your kids or what they are teaching your kids? Of course you don't. They make it pretty much impossible to find out. They said there seems to be a common goal among parents as to what makes a good public school. For instance, they want quality academic program, a safe environment for their children, and parenting left to parents. It's not a difficult recipe. It's one that we've used in the past. Well, no, actually, that is a fantasy. None of that has been the design of the schools. Go back and look at the writings and the intentions of John Dewey and of Horace Mann before him. That was never to have to have a quality academic program, to have a safe environment for the kids and the parenting left to the parents. That was not the agenda. It was just that they needed to establish what they have today in a gradual way. It was always about taking parenting away from the parents. And it was always about shoving academics to the curb for social engineering. It's always been about social engineering. That was the purpose that it was brought in. So it's not broken. It's working perfectly fine. They said, we're seeing activism instead of achievement in schools. 82% of parents we polled said they don't want politics in the classroom. 71% want core subjects instead of ideology. And of that 71%, 66% are self-identified as liberals. Even the liberals don't want this. But what you don't understand is that they don't care what you want. They have their agenda, their social agenda, and they're going to move on with it. We just had over the weekend the 25th anniversary of TWA Flight 800. I won't go into a lot of detail about this. We've covered it in the past. I've interviewed people who've made documentaries about it. It's important not just because of the 230 people who died and their families and the impact that it had upon them, but it's also important for us to understand how easy it is for the government to control the media and how dishonest the FBI has been for decades about these types of things. They don't just lie and cover up when it's something like Ruby Ridge or Waco. This was a lie. It was a cover-up. I certainly don't believe that it was intentional. I don't even believe that the shooting down of the Iranian plane back in, I think it was 1988, there was an Iranian passenger plane. There was 290 people who died in that particular instance. That was a situation where it wasn't a training exercise that was happening right there, but it was a actually shooting war that was going on. So it's kind of the fog of war. They accidentally shot down a a passenger airliner, killing everybody on board. And because it was Iran and because they were hostile, there was absolutely no way that they were going to get that covered up. They did not, if it was a friendly nation, they could have gone through backdoor channels and funneled some money or something in there, made a deal with them, but there was no deal to be made. And so that came out. So it's not as if this is not in the realm of possibility that something like this could happen, because again, it had happened in 1988, very publicly. And I would point out that Iran was, even in those heightened conflicts, they accepted compensation for it. Yet when the government accidentally does it as part of a naval training exercise, and there are many witnesses who saw the missile, you look at the forensics about this, and most importantly, you look at the flight data recorders that the FBI meticulously went around and confiscated from people, the evidence to show that happened. So the Americans who were shot down in America by an American missile and an American plane got no compensation whatsoever. But this has been the way that the FBI has operated for a very long time in terms of doing cover-ups. We can see it in something that just came out this weekend, for example. The FBI covering up for a serial child rapist with 500 victims and allowed him to continue to rape in the meantime because they covered it up. This is coming from the Freethought Project, but it's actually a report that was put out by the Office of the Inspector General of the Department of Justice. And they were the ones criticizing multiple FBI offices. This was, and you probably recall this about, 4 years ago, 2017, you had a situation where a guy that was involved with the U.S. Gymnastics program, Larry Nassar, it was exposed by some of the female gymnasts, some of the particulars, and then they started comparing notes. They found out it was a lot of people, and then they found out that it was very long-term, and for decades this has been happening. They said the U.S. Gymnastics program had horrid sexual abuse and cover-up. For decades, children were sacrificed and their abusers protected. Why? Well, because, the Olympics are so important. We have to maintain this image, and so we can't allow any bad news to come out just like Flight 800, right? It's very important that we not injure our credibility with the public. So what we'll do is destroy our credibility with obvious lies and cover-up, which is what is happening today massively. These types of things have been a part of our government for a very long time. It's just that now they're doing it to everyone, about the so-called science of this pandemic, about the election, about everything. In 2017, the man at the center of all this, because it's not just one individual, that's the other part of this. This is very widespread throughout the U.S. Olympic gymnastics program. But the man who was at the center of it pled guilty to multiple charges of sexual assault against children. He was given decades behind bars. Now we find out that the FBI knew about the abuse and allowed the child predator, Larry Nassar, to continue preying on little girls for more than a year after finding out. According to a new report from the Inspector General of the U.S. Department of Justice, the Indianapolis FBI office facilitated this abuse, and it violated agency procedures. It made false statements. It exhibited extremely poor judgment in the handling of a 2015 sexual abuse allegation. Quote, senior officials in the FBI Indianapolis field office failed to respond to allegations of sexual abuse by athletes by former USA gymnast physician Lawrence Nassar with the urgency that the allegations required, said the Inspector General's office. We also found that the FBI Indianapolis field office made fundamental errors when it did respond to the allegations. They failed to notify the appropriate FBI field office, the one Lansing Resonance Agency, or state or local officials in the allegations. So they basically didn't do an investigation, and they didn't tell anybody. Why? Because they're there in Indianapolis, and the USA Gymnastics program is headquartered in Indianapolis as well. Now, in L.A., they did get word of this, and the FBI LA field office did an investigation, but they also failed to notify the appropriate people within the FBI or other law enforcement agencies. The FBI Lansing resident agency that was the one that was supposed to cover this, evidently, and let everybody know. They did not become aware of these allegations until after Michigan State University Police Department executed a search warrant on his residence and discovered child pornography at his residence. And at that point, they notified the FBI, the appropriate offices there, and they started to do this. But when we look at this, there's a lot of different aspects of this. You know, just think about the misconduct and the cover-up with Flight 800 and so many other things that we could bring up. And now this is coming out. Why? Because one thing that the media and the government will investigate, and they should investigate, is rape. But pretty much everything else, if it has anything to do with the government, any kind of exposure of powerful institutions or popular institutions or individuals that are powerful, they will sweep that under the carpet. But at least for the time being, they're still looking at rape. I don't know how much longer that's going to go. But not within the government. The media will eventually get on it. And there's still some elements within the government. But just point out that there's a lot of elements in the government that do not care about that. And, of course, I would include all of Congress in that, for example. Because it was Congress that failed to reform itself after we've had multiple members exposed as being pedophiles. Nobody there has ever suggested that you take off the statute of limitations for pedophiles so they could put people like Dennis Hastert, longest-serving Speaker of the House for the Republicans, put him behind bars for that crime as he deserved. Instead, they put him behind bars for a different crime that he did not deserve and called it quits. But they need to have that kind of reform, and they could do that, but they don't, even though he's not the only one who was involved in that cover-up. He actually covered up for other pedophiles before they got him. It's rampant. For me, the scariest night of my life happened when I was 15 years old, said one girl. I had flown all day and night with the team to get to Tokyo. He'd given me a sleeping pill for the flight, and the next thing I know, I was all alone with him in his hotel room getting a quote-unquote treatment. I thought I was going to die that night, said a USA gymnast on Twitter. Before her account was deactivated. Apparently, maybe she must have deactivated it. the investigation was really pushed by the Indy Star, not so much the Department of Justice. They're following on to this because it was publicized by that newspaper. They revealed that top executives at one of America's most prominent Olympic organizations failed to alert authorities to many allegations of sexual abuse by coaches, relying on a policy that enabled predators to abuse gymnasts long after they'd received warnings. USA Gymnastics would not disclose the total number of sexual misconduct allegations that it receives each year, but records show that the organization compiled complaint dossiers on more than 50 coaches. And they filed them in a drawer in its executive office in Indianapolis, where the cover-up was taking place by the FBI office. I probably put them in the vertical file. Caitlin Johnstone points out that all these people want to talk about January the 6th and violent extremists. I love this headline. She said, violent extremists took over the U.S. Capitol long before January the 6th, and she's absolutely right. You want some violent extremists? Take a look at the people who've been running our government under both Republican and Democrat parties for decades. Yeah. She said, no longer content with absurd claims that the January 6th Capitol riot was as bad as the 9/11 attacks, Democrat Party-aligned pundits are now insisting it was, in fact, worse. And it's not just the Democrat pundit. And, you know, Caitlin Johnstone, Australian, and she leans left. But I read you last week the comments from a guy that was in the George W. Bush administration, and he basically said the same thing. He said, you know, we had Pearl Harbor, we had 9/11, those are bad. But they unified the country. This is even worse because it was just so horrific. You know? And except when you look at the body count, no, it wasn't. But he says, but this has divided the country, not united the country. So it is worse, he says, than 9/11 or Pearl Harbor. So that was a Republican. But she says Democrat Party aligned pundits. And they're the ones who are mostly saying this, of course. She said, she talked about Joy Reid, who said the same thing that that George W. Bush appointee did. January 6th was worse than 9/11 because it continued to rip our country apart and to get permission for people to pursue autocratic means. So I think we're in a much worse place than we've been. I think we're in the most perilous point in time since 1861 with the advent of the Civil War. And with Joy Reid, but that was Bush strategist Matthew Dowd, and that was the same person who I was quoting from last week, but he was on with a Democrat. They keep pushing for the Civil War narrative because they keep pushing a Civil War. You have Biden comparing himself to Lincoln. They're talking about the Civil War, and I'm telling you, this is a fourth turning. They're fully aware of what this is about. They're fully aware that this could turn into a Civil War. This could turn into a world war. It could also be a revolution. Those are the three previous fourth turnings that we've had. The Great Depression, World War II, prior to that, the Civil War, prior to that, the Revolutionary War. And I've said this could be all three of them together because this is a global issue. And we're going to talk about people pushing back globally, what is happening globally. So we can have a global war that could be civil wars in each of these countries. And then the question is it going to wind up being a revolution that makes us freer? Or are we going to go down further into authoritarianism? That's the real issue. But she says, not to be outdone, Lincoln Project co-founder Steve Smith cited Matthew Dowd's historical claim. But he added that not only was it worse than 9/11, but it was actually going to kill more Americans somehow, even counting all those killed in the U.S. wars which ensued after the 9/11 attack. He said, oh, he couldn't be more right, he said. And her conclusion, she says, all the fretting that everyone's been doing about all the fascists and white supremacist group, she said, they're not the ones who are the most dangerous or violent. She said, neither are the communists or the anarchists or the radicalized Muslims or the fundamentalist Christians or the environmentalists or the incels, all the favorite villains of the mainstream media. No, she said, the most deadly and dangerous group of violent extremists in our day are the adherents of the mainstream status quo politics of the U.S. centralized power alliance. It's not even close. She said, yeah, there's violent elements or dangerous elements pretty much in these other groups that are listed, but they're not the ones who are raining explosives on families around the world for power and profit, as the military-industrial complex does. And this is a big blind spot for Christians, isn't it? The blind spot to our endless wars. They don't end until we lose them, like Vietnam, Afghanistan. But they will otherwise not end because they're simply about power and profit. Let's go to a break, Travis, and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Common man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing.
If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Supreme Court before we get into vaccines and lockdowns and all the rest of this. We have the DACA ruling that came that got changed yet again over the weekend. This is a federal judge, Andrew Hannon of the U.S. District Court in Houston. And this is part of a lawsuit that was filed by several states against DACA. As they point out in this article by Zero Hedge, nuances in the judge's decision will allow the program to stand for at least now. So it's still going to continue, even though he says it is illegal. Well, because we have nuances in it, right? Let's talk about some of the nuances that have surfaced in this narrative going on for several years. DACA, by the way, is Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals. That means anybody under the age of 30, under 30, still as a child. Right. So first of all, it's not about children. when it was introduced, this is a program that was created by the Obama administration by an executive order coming out of the executive branch. It was Janet Napolitano, head of the Department of Homeland Security, the people who are tasked with enforcing domestic federal law. So it was Janet Napolitano saying that she's not going to enforce the law. And so I said from the very beginning, first of all, it is not, she has an obligation to enforce the law, whether you like the policy or not. And I'm not even going to talk about the immigration policy, really. We're just going to talk about the legal aspects of this, because I want people left and right to understand what's really going on here. It's a very, very dangerous situation, a game that we're playing here with the judiciary. And so apart from the policy of immigration, and you have elections, theoretically, so that you can have presidents who set policy. But whether or not you like the policy, they have the authority to set immigration policy. That has been delegated to them in the Constitution. What is not delegated to them in the Constitution is to be able to just ignore any laws that were enacted by Congress. And yet that is what the Obama administration did. Now, we have a separation of powers. So, you know, that is something that he can do. And if they don't call him on it, if the other two branches don't call him on it, then he gets away with it. And neither the other two branches did. So I say this is a failure. This is not just a failure of Obama. It's not just a failure of the judiciary. It's not just a failure of Trump. It's also a failure of Congress. It's a failure of multiple administrations of both political parties. And it is a failure to exercise their power as they are required, to do their duty, if you will. They are, all of these political branches are essentially abdicating to the judiciary and to the regulatory agencies many of these decisions because they don't want to take the political heat. And the same thing was true with the Trump administration. So in the Obama administration, they create an executive order. And then we had the strange situation, for the Republicans did not do anything to push back against that. Paul Rhino was always open border. So the Republican base did not like their inactivity. Neither he nor Mitch McConnell would do anything about it. And so that was one of the reasons why President Trump focused on that. It was a very popular policy with the Republican base. The Republican leadership was out of touch with the Republican base. Trump got in touch with that. But then when he got into office and he had it was a deputy DHS director, said, we're going to let this expire. And they didn't really fight too hard. The Supreme Court came back and said, well, we don't like your justification. And that was by John Roberts. He wrote the majority opinion. In the same way, that whether you like his policy or not about the travel ban that happened, they call that the Muslim ban. It was not a Muslim ban, as I point out many times. There were seven countries. Venezuela is not Muslim, neither is North Korea. I think it was those two. I don't think it was Iran. But they were listed, and then there were five Muslim nations. But there are 50 predominantly Muslim nations. So it is not a Muslim ban if you only ban 10%. And these are countries that Obama had gone to war with. If you only ban 10% of the Muslim nations, it's not a Muslim ban. And if you ban other people traveling from other countries, it is not a Muslim ban. But you have the judiciary saying, well, you don't like his motivations on this, and so we're going to say that he can't do that. And they essentially did the same thing with DACA. And so in 2017, you had John Roberts say that they had violated the Administrative Procedures Act, which governs regulations that come out of the bureaucracy. This is not that. This is an executive order. It is not a bureaucratic regulation, first of all. And interestingly enough, this decision by Judge Hannon said that it was the Obama administration that violated the Administrative Procedures Act, right? So John Roberts in the Supreme Court said that Trump violated the Administrative Procedures Act by shutting down the executive order of Obama. Whereas this judge has just said that Obama, in his original order, violated the Administrative Procedures Act by saying that he's not going to enforce the law, that he has a duty to enforce. So there never was any such thing as Dreamers. They've tried many times to pass a Dreamers Act, and it's never passed. So they, again, invented that, you know, just like the shark encounter stuff. So we'll call it, you know, we'll label it the Dream Act. It was never a Dream Act. They have tried to do that many times, and now Biden is saying, now we got to double down and really pass this thing this time. It's kind of like what they would say in terms of, well, they're not illegal aliens, but we have to get rid of the laws that make them illegal. Okay, you just admitted that it's against the law to come here without certain things being done. So they speak out of both sides of their mouths, but so does the court, frankly. They said in the decision from John Roberts back in 2017 that the Trump Department of Justice, so you have the Obama DHS, says we're not going to enforce the law, and that's what we're going to do. Nobody called them on that until just now. And I don't know, I forget when it was actually done, what year it was done. But that's been in place now for several years. And now, for the first time, you've had a judge call him out and say, well, that wasn't legitimate. And we knew it wasn't legitimate. But when the Trump Department of Homeland Security said, no, we're going to enforce the law, they said, you can't do that. And you can't get rid of the executive order from the previous president. I mean, that's the absurdity of all of this, to say that Trump's Department of Homeland Security cannot enforce the law, whereas the Obama Department of Homeland Security can say, we're not going to enforce the law. And then you have an executive order from the Obama administration that when Trump comes in, he's not allowed, according to the Supreme Court, according to judicial supremacy, judicial tyranny, he's not allowed to get rid of the executive order from the previous president. Now, what should Trump have done? The poor victim. I mean, he can't get a break, right? No, he passively complied with this because he didn't want to have the political pressure. He wanted to make it clear to his base, oh, I agree with you. I feel your pain. I sympathize. And see, I did everything that I could, but the Supreme Court won't let me. He liked to compare himself to Andrew Jackson, but there's no comparison whatsoever. Andrew Jackson had crafted, if you will, a not an immigration policy, but you could call it an emigration policy, where they were going to take the Cherokee out of their native homelands and ship them to Oklahoma. And it was a horrible policy, but he had the presidential power to do it. It was called the Trail of Tears. The Supreme Court, people sued to try to stop that, but the Supreme Court said, no, that's within his power. And after they started to see the consequences of what this horrific policy was about, the Supreme Court decided that they would stop it. They didn't like what it looked like. Andrew Jackson said, well, they've issued their opinion telling him to stop. And he said, let's see them enforce it. Because they had no power. The most statist of the founding fathers, Alexander Hamilton, said the least dangerous branch of government is the judiciary because they have no way to enforce what they want to do. But now they have become, by their gradual usurpation, and mostly by the abdication of power by politically elected Congress and presidents who do not want to do the unpopular thing, they can sit on the fence. They can pretend that it's not their decision. And they can pass the buck to the Supreme Court. And that's exactly what Trump did on this issue. And he's not alone. All of these presidents have done this on issue after issue after issue. And so the whole thing is a fraud. But I want people left and right to look at the chaos that this now presents. Because by establishing judicial supremacy and saying that any federal judge anywhere at any level can boss presidents around. I mean, how many times did you see President Trump being told by a federal judge somewhere that he can't do this or he can't do that, and immediately President Trump bows down in submission? Yes, okay, all right, I'll do exactly as you say. So this is something that has been going on for quite some time. It has now created chaotic situation because nobody knows what the status is of anyone because we don't have anyone with a spine in either party. They all want to defer this to judges, and all these different judges have different opinions about this. So this is where we are now. So now Biden is calling the court decision deeply disappointing, and he vows to appeal it. Appeal it is always going to the judiciary. This is the same thing that Trump is doing with free speech now. He never even had his Justice Department try to do anything to take any action to protect speech while he was president. And so now he's going to do a civil lawsuit to supposedly protect speech. And again, he didn't even need to use the power of the presidency. He could have used his oversized popularity and the fact that he dominated Twitter. He could have used it to put market pressure on him. Wouldn't you think that some guy who is a Republican and he's supposedly become a billionaire by operating in the free market, don't you think he would believe in the power of the market? Don't you think that he would understand as a celebrity how he could move things? Of course he understood all that. The big fallacy in all that is that he became a billionaire by competing in a free marketplace. He became a billionaire by greasing the palms of dirty politicians in New York City. That's the simple fact about it. His connections to politicians, his connections to the mafia. But Biden calls the court DACA decision deeply disappointing. The judge said in his ruling on Friday that it was the Obama Department of Homeland Security that violated the Administrative Procedure Act by the creation of DACA and by its continued operation, just the opposite of John Roberts and the Supreme Court under Trump. So they said it in 2017, they said no. And so then they said, we'll give you another year to come up with a better reason. I need a better reason to say that, A, we're going to enforce the law, and B, this is a executive order from the previous administration. So they came back with a different person there at DHS, and then they said, well, you didn't give us a good enough reason, so we're just going to say no. And that was 2018. And again, President Trump did nothing. He should have said they've issued their opinion, let's see them enforce it. I've got immigration law, and that is what I'm supposed to enforce. We had an election. People voted for this policy. It's what my base wants. I'm going to do what the base that put me in office wants. None of that happened. I repeatedly called on Congress, said Biden, to pass the American Dream and Promise Act, and I now renew that call with greater urgency. Congress will finally provide security to all dreamers who've lived too long in fear. Yeah, he admits that they never have a law, never had a law. They never had a Dream Act, right? It's all a fiction created by the press. But then that brings us to the question of what is really going on in the Supreme Court. You know, we've had a lot of decisions lately where everybody said, look at this. The Supreme Court unanimously came up with this one and another unanimous decision, and this one is nearly unanimous. What is going on? We've never seen anything like this. Well, yes, we have. If you remember, when FDR determined that he was going to pack the Supreme Court as part of the New Deal, they had at least one of the judges started voting in the way that FDR would want him to vote. And the way the press described it at the time, maybe you remember this phrase, a stitch in time saves nine, right? When we used to repair our garments instead of just throwing them in the trash because they cost so little being made by slave labor in China. It used to be that clothes were expensive, and people would try to repair them. And if you started the repair early, you could save the garment, and you could, you know, do a lot less repair. So a stitch in time saves nine. Well, when you had this change in the Supreme Court after being threatened with court packing by FDR, somebody said, well, a switch in time saved nine, meaning that this particular judge switched the way that he was voting to keep FDR from packing the Supreme Court and changing the number, increasing it from nine. I think we're seeing the same thing happening now. We've had a couple of reporters over the weekend, one of them with OANN, Emerald Robinson, a Trump-supporting organization, conservative, and then another one that was put out on Newsweek by a law professor and writer, Josh Blackman, who is on the left side of the scale. Both of them have noticed some suspicious activity, and there has also been some public warning and leaks from people who are conservatives on the court, evidently, starting with Emerald Robinson for OANN. She said that Justices Alito and Thomas are already publicly warning conservatives that Barrett and Kavanaugh lack fortitude and are unwilling to bear the criticism that comes with making conservative decisions. They've gone wobbly, in other words. Well, you know, that's not really a surprise, is it? When we look at where these people were pulled from, the surprise is when they go the other way, isn't it? This is why when the left picks Supreme Court justices, they get exactly what they want. And when the right picks Supreme Court justices, because we pick them from this narrow pool of Georgetown graduates, typically. I know Barrett graduated from Notre Dame, no difference, really. But most of them are Georgetown graduates, a part of this establishment clique. And for a conservative president to pick Supreme Court justices from that, and expecting that something is going to be different, we're even dumber than Forrest Gump. Because picking justices from that pool is like, you know, picking something out of a box of chocolates. You never know exactly what you're going to get with those black-robed justices there. Except that we do know, for the most part. The real surprise is when we wind up with somebody like Gorsuch or something out of that pool. That's the surprise. So it's a very narrow pool. It's career bureaucrats who've gone through the most statist schools and the Federalist Society, Georgetown University, that group. And that's exactly what we're seeing now with the two of them. We've seen it with multiple decisions. As Josh Blackman points out, these are not statements that are coming just from Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito, but also Neil Gorsuch have warned that Justices Kavanaugh and Barrett lack a backbone. And we just saw this recently with Kavanaugh and the CDC decision. When the CDC came in and did a massive usurpation of power with declaring a moratorium on any evictions or foreclosures, doing that under Trump, extending it multiple times under Trump. They've already extended it multiple times under Biden. They lost in court four times in a row, and then they lost an appeal the fifth time. And then finally, they found a judge who agreed with them at an appeal level. So they were 0-5, and then finally they got one victory. And then they go to the Supreme Court, and it was tied 4-4, amazingly. And Kavanaugh says, well, I know that what they've done is a gross usurpation of power. However, they said they're going to stop at the end of July, so we're going to call it moot and let them keep going. Absolutely amazing. And I said, this is the kind of prevarication that we have seen in the past from John Roberts. And so Kavanaugh, yeah, he is a real snake. And then when it comes to Amy Coney Barrett, a lot of people believe that she was going to, you know, she was portrayed as a conservative Catholic and a pro-life and all this sort of thing. But again, she made it very clear when in her confirmation hearings, she lied and she said that Roe v. Wade is the law of the land. They all do that. And they're all lying because the Supreme Court doesn't create law. It issues opinions. That's not the same thing. But it is a stake in the ground that the Supreme Court has put there to aggrandize and to usurp power itself. I think Roe v. Wade is as important to their power as Marbury versus Madison, where they first gave themselves the power to define which laws and which actions are constitutional and which ones are not. Thomas Jefferson said that's the end of the Constitution when they did that, if we let that stand. Well, they did let it stand. And they didn't really push on it hard until the middle of the 20th century. But that has now become the basis for them deciding when life begins. They can decide when life will end, at the end of life. They can decide those types of issues. They've decided the definition of marriage. None of this is in the sphere of the federal government, certainly not in the sphere of the judiciary to do this. And so they're not going to do that. And Barrett said in her confirmation hearings, she said, we're not going to touch Roe v. Wade. It's the law of the land. She wants that precedent to stand. She said, we may modify it around the edges. In other words, there might be some additional restrictions here and there, but the fundamental idea that we're going to define when life begins and we're going to do it in the Supreme Court, we're going to keep that power because that is a linchpin that allows us to intrude into every aspect of life. So Alito, Gorsuch, Thomas, they said when a case came before them with the city of Philadelphia, and again, the city of Philadelphia was violating the First Amendment because it stopped referring foster children to a Catholic foster care agency because the agency would not certify same-sex couples. And so the three conservatives on the court said that we need to overturn an incorrect precedent that goes back to 1990. That incorrect precedent said that the First Amendment's free exercise clause tolerates any rule that categorically prohibits or commands specific conduct as long as it does not target religious practice. In other words, by that, by religious practice, they don't mean you actually living your beliefs. Right? I mean, I look at religious practice, and that is, you know, I understand what God requires of me, and that touches everything that I do in life. It doesn't just touch on worship services, for example, on a Sunday morning. It touches on everything, but they narrowly defined it that way as a religious practice. And that was in 1990. I've said for the longest time that we've had many conservative churches prior to 2020 who would say, well, they would agree with that, right? They would say the government can tell you anything and you just obey it according to Romans 13. I think that's a very gross misunderstanding of Romans 13. I won't get into that theological aspect of it, but I said for the longest time, you know, they would withhold one thing and they would say, unless they tell me that we can't get together and worship or they're going to shut the church down. And I said, well, I don't believe that. Because if they accept the premise that any horrific rule coming from the government, no matter how arbitrary, no matter how immoral, that you're supposed to somehow, you have an obligation to obey that, then when it comes time for them to shut the churches down and to ban worship, these churches won't do anything. And what did we see in 2020? And we still have churches that won't do anything to stop even the shutdown of worship or the banning of worship. And so, and it is an obvious, I mean, we could look at it from the text, or we could just look at the example of Paul's life. When they came to arrest him, Al Waddell has pointed out, you know, he had people who helped him to escape. They lowered him in a basket over the wall so he could escape. He didn't just submit to those authorities because what they were doing was out of line with God's, with moral law, with ethical law. And when he was arrested on another occasion and put in jail, and if you may remember the story, there's an earthquake, and you know they are essentially freed, but they decide not to leave. The jailer was freaked out because he knew that he was going to be murdered if they had escaped. But they stayed there for his benefit, and the next day, powers that be came by, and they were going to free them because they realized that they'd done nothing wrong. And Paul said, no, I'm a Roman citizen, and you didn't follow due process. And he, you know, he held them to following the law. We need to hold these people to following the Constitution. We don't need to cut them any slack. And if you're telling me that the same guy who wrote Romans 13 stood up to these Roman authorities and demanded that he get due process and that they respect the law, that is, you know, cognitive dissonance that doesn't only disagree with the text, but disagrees with his own life that he was living. So when we look at this, that was the ruling going back to 1990, that the First Amendment free exercise clause, they could dictate anything in your life as long as it didn't impinge on your basic, you know, what they would consider to be religious practice, so actually like a worship service. So Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch said, we need to get rid of that because that's not true. And yet Kavanaugh and Barrett would not take that up. You know, Barrett, who is supposed to be, right? This, she's going to be very religious, and she's going to protect life, and she's going to protect worship services. She's a Catholic. She wouldn't even sign on really to protect the city of Philadelphia outside of a very narrow aspect of this. Gorsuch, in an opinion, called out the court's lack of courage and said, you didn't really address the key issue here. And he said, dodging this question today guarantees that these cases will keep coming until the court musters the fortitude to supply an answer. And so Blackman, who again wrote for Newsweek, said Justices Barrett and Kavanaugh argued that California's singing ban on churches could remain in place during the COVID pandemic. Think about that. Barrett thus used her first separate writing on the court to rule against people of faith. Yeah, so much for a conservative, so much for somebody who's going to support freedom of religion and pro-life issues, right? Then there's the case of a Christian florist from Washington State being punished by the state because she refused to create a custom floral arrangement for a same-sex wedding. Three justices, again, the same three, Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch, voted to take her case. She only needed one more justice to vote in her favor to get the case before the Supreme Court. Neither Kavanaugh nor Barrett would support this Christian florist who's being persecuted by the LGP. They would not support even listening to her case. So as Blackman points out, he says this could be maybe that they've aligned themselves with Roberts. Or it could be that there's something else involved. When we look at all of these unanimous or near unanimous decisions, Roberts, who is all about maintaining his power there, and probably, you know, it's probably a combination of these people who have no principles other than politics, their political careers and their perception with other people. I think, though, that they don't have any real core values either. I mean, you look at Brett Kavanaugh, seriously, you think this guy is the essence of what I would have expected Trump to pick. Gorsuch is the one that's weird. I wouldn't have expected Trump to get somebody that appears to be as principled as Gorsuch. But of course, time will tell. But he does seem to be following into a principled rut here, as Thomas and Alito have. But Gorsuch is a surprise. Kavanaugh isn't. When you look at this guy's background, he looks like a Washington player, if anyone. And so I'd expect that Barrett and Kavanaugh would go along with Roberts, that they would work to make sure that they are making the switch in time to save nine. Exactly. We did have a court, a Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, rule on Friday against the University of Iowa. In 2018, the University of Iowa decided to deregister InterVarsity, along with other student religious groups on campus, over their common sense practice of requiring leaders to agree with its statement of faith. The university cited its human rights policy, which mandates that student groups not differentiate on the basis of race, sexual orientation, gender identity, or a range of other categories, religion included. Beside the school's obvious trampling on students' freedom of religion, lawyers for the Christian group argued that the school had enforced its policy discriminatorily. And the Eighth Circuit Court agreed. In the ruling, the court told the school administrators it was hard-pressed to find a clear example of viewpoint discrimination, because they allowed people to discriminate on the basis of race, sexual orientation, gender identity, and every other category except religion. They said it carved out exemptions, it ignored other violative groups with missions that the university supported. The court also warned that school officials who, quote, make calculated choices about enacting or enforcing such unconstitutional policies are not entitled to qualified immunity, but rather should be held personally responsible for their actions. Think about that. Again, to say that this is a university official and state university or whatever, they're not going to give them qualified immunity. They're saying that, oh, by the way, if you take someone's you attack somebody on the basis of their religious belief. And we've had a couple of cases that have happened with that for student presidents. The one that is percolating right now, they're trying to remove, to impeach a student body president simply because he put out a message that says, born this way? Well, you need to be born again, all right? Oh, no, we're going to get rid of him now. And the university has come out and tried to straddle the fence and said, well, we find that to be abhorrent, but we are not going to, we're not going to do anything to stop it. We're not going to weigh in on this one side or the other. We think that he has a right to speech, but they're not going to block the recall petition. You've already had a student body president kicked out because he had an unpopular expression of his Christian beliefs in a private group. And they removed him from being president. He was able to get a $100,000 award when he sued FSU, Florida State University. But what this court is saying, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals on Friday, said, oh, by the way, you don't have to just sue the university. You can sue the university president. Very important. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App,
Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family. All right, and we're going to be talking about Freedom Day in the U.K. Is it really freedom? Yeah, it's going to be their July 10th. July 19th, their Freedom Day. I don't think it's going to be Freedom Day. We're going to talk a little bit about the Biden administration as the South African variant of Marxism. And then we're going to get into some of the vaccine and lockdown issues. I just want to say once again, welcome to the new listeners on APS Radio News. You can listen with the live button there. APS also has a music channel, APS Radio Music. So make sure you go over there and check that out. We do appreciate them carrying us. And you can also find us on aftermath.fm if you want to get a live feed of just an audio feed. We have the live video feeds, of course, on Trovo and on DLive. And so I want to say to the people listening on APS Radio and on aftermath.fm that when you heard those beeps there, that was PayPal and Venmo who banned us from getting money. But we do have places where you can support us. We have a P.O. box, and we do get a lot of people who send things by mail now. There's other ways. Zelle, Cash App, Bitcoin are still up, and we are getting things from our supporters. I'll get into most of this, I think, coming up with the vaccine aspects, but I really love this that was sent from one of the supporters. And it's a wrist band, you know, that you've got the little adhesive thing here you put on your wrist. But what it says is, do not vaccinate. I'm part of a control group. And there's actually a website where you can get this. Controlgroup.fyi. I don't know if that's a real website or not. I don't know if there's, is there an FYI extension? I didn't look this up to see if it's actually a website. You could pull that up and see if you find that, Travis. But I like that because I've said that for the longest time, that I am actually part of a control group since we're in the experimental stage right now and we're doing the evaluation that is supposed to run for a minimum of 3 years before they pushed out the Trump shots sent around the world. We had a World Health Organization meeting where you had multiple people show up and say, you know, we're not running these vaccine tests long enough to find the long-term effects when they were 3 years. So we decided we would do it in 2 or 3 months for the Trump shots. So, you know, we're in a phase right now. I don't even think it's a phase two test, frankly. But we're in a phase of testing. And so I'm part of that control group that doesn't get the vaccine. And so I'm volunteering for science. And I will continue to volunteer for the rest of my life, frankly, to be part of that control group. I will not be going to get my Trump shots. Let's talk a little bit about the Biden administration, the South African variant of the of Marxism. And, of course, what is happening in South Africa right now, we have actually, I had a program. I didn't put it out on the podcast yet, but I will be putting that out on the podcast. We did put it up on the video channels. We talked to Jack Lawson, who did CivilDefenseManual.com's two-volume set of books. A lot of great advice. Made me think about him when I saw the people defending their neighborhoods. You know, what do you need to do in terms of coming together with people in your community to defend yourself under these types of situations? Because there's so many different things. It's not just, you know, it could be a natural disaster. It could be anything that takes down the food supply, which is really anything that takes down the transportation infrastructure. That's what we saw at the beginning of the lockdown, was these arbitrary mandates saying that restaurants are not essential. All of a sudden that created food shortages as well as food being destroyed. As I showed you on Friday, you know, these pictures of the fleet. It's a fleet of big tankers with milk just pouring it out. Why? Because they can't get to where they need to send it. There's no facilities to accept it. And that's exactly the same type of thing that we had happening with food all last year. So we have a system, and it's one of the things that Jack Lawson and I about on Saturday. I had a special broadcast for about 45 minutes. He came on. We talked about what could be done. He's somebody who's had a lot of experience in Africa. As a matter of fact, he fought Marxists there in Zimbabwe, Rhodesia, when it was called that. So he knows exactly what these people are about. He spent a lot of time in South Africa. And it's really uncanny when you look at how close what they're doing there is to what we're doing here. Even the open borders immigration with businesses pulling in cheap labor from other countries. Very, very poor countries. There was a huge disparity between the wealth in South Africa and the surrounding nations. They had a massive pull to get cheap labor in, and so people started coming in because the corporations wanted them to, and the politicians then had a captive base that would appeal to them for help. And the people that were there, other black Africans, the Zulus and other, were attacking and killing some of these people. And, of course, the lions were as well, as they point out. It's pretty amazing when you think about the situation in Africa. When I talked to Simon Roche last week, he was talking about gun control measures, and he said that they would very, very tightly restrain the conditions under which you could have a gun at all. But they would leave a little bit of a carve out there because, you know, there's things like lions in Africa. What Jack Lawson was saying was a lot of the people were coming as immigrants. They had no place to live. And they were getting picked off and eaten by lions. They were having, as the marine biologist in Australia would say, they were having lion encounters, euphemistically. But he said that they would tie themselves in the trees when they would sleep, because if they fell out of the trees, the lions would get them. And he said the lions would actually corral people. They'd actually kind of create like a gauntlet and funnel them into areas. I mean, they were clever about how they would hunt groups of people and take them out. What was that movie? Ghost in the Darkness? Yeah, that was about a couple of lions that just went through a railroad construction crew. Just unbelievable what was happening. Great film if you haven't seen it. It's pretty amazing. True story. Anyway, the this is what was happening there. But the people who are really the predators are the politicians. And one of the things that Jack Lawson said, and we talked about a lot of the geopolitics as well, is not just the preparations, but he said whoever... the mineral resources in Africa are just unbelievable, not just diamonds and things like that, so much stuff. And so that's really going to be a big fight. China is way ahead of this. They're going to be able to use this stuff for their own advantage, and they're using the Belt and Road Initiative, as I pointed out last week, for their own advantage. But he said whoever controls South Africa is going to control Africa and all those resources. And so that's one of the reasons why a lot of this stuff is happening. And as Simon Roche and many people were writing last week, of course, what you saw happening was not really directly a protest in support of Zuma, the previous president that was arrested. It was very widespread. And many people were pointing out that a lot of these riots were happening in places that did not support Zuma. They believed it was terrorism. And now the current president is jumping on that and saying the same thing. He said it's quite clear that all these incidents of unrest and looting were instigated, that there are people who planned it and coordinated it. I believe that is true. I believe that is true, just like what happened here with Antifa and BLM was coordinated. Absolutely was. And again, it's something that, you know, Trump passively let that go on. Because if it is coordinated, and it was could have easily been investigated, at the very least, they could have investigated that coordination. But of course, the FBI, with its political orientation, was not interested in looking at that at all, the coordination or investigating that. Unrest across Johannesburg and Durban has dramatically subsided in the last day, either because the military is being deployed or because rioters have run out of stores and warehouses to loot and burn, as thousands of businesses were already destroyed in the week-long mayhem there. Between Monday and Wednesday, tensions among racial groups, black versus white, black versus Indian, flared up to near civil war levels during the height of the chaos. The death toll is now about 117, with thousands of people arrested. And on Revolver, this is the headline, South Africa is the first country that has been built on critical race theory. If you think about it, that's true. It's exactly what has happened there. And of course, it's Marxism, because Marxism underlies critical race theory. It is simply a tactic. It's a tactic being used by white liberals, going back to the Weather Underground, and to Bill Ayers and people of his ilk. They're the ones who created the whole idea of white skin privilege. Now we call it white privilege, but they did that. They took that agenda into the schools. As I said many times, Bill Ayers stopped bombing buildings as a Marxist terrorist. They went to Chicago, became friends with Obama, among other things. But he went to Chicago and got himself into the educational establishment elite so that he could bomb children's minds. And that is what this really is. But if you look at South Africa, as Revolver points out, South Africa was the first modern nation to be refounded on the anti-white principles of critical race theory. Now it's reaping the whirlwind of that choice. South Africa did everything that is being done in Africa and America right now. As a hyper-diverse, multi-ethnic, multilingual society, South Africa has followed every prescription embraced by the globalist ruling class. Because the globalist ruling class are neo-Marxists. George Gilder pointed that out. He said, if you look at their justification, their attempt to establish universal basic income, their agenda for the Great Reset, their agenda to make sure that we own nothing, that we're dependent upon them, they are neo-Marxists. Neo-Marxists, even in their orientation, their economic orientation, just as Marx believed that because of the Industrial Revolution, there was going to be no material want of anything. It was just a matter of redistribution of that wealth. We had infinite wealth because of the Industrial Revolution. Well, no, actually we didn't. But now the neo-Marxists of Silicon Valley believe that because of their advanced technology, many of them, genetics, robotics, artificial intelligence, nanotechnology, because of all those and because of their infinite supply of money, that they can own the world, and they have unlimited material resources. Same conceit and ignorance of Karl Marx. And many of them, I think, truly believe that. But they also are not interested in helping their fellow man. They're interested in helping themselves. They always want more of what it is that they love, and that is money. I mean, just look at this billionaire space race that we've got going between Elon Musk and Bezos and Branson. They're all about the subsidies. They're all about their own self-promotion, their own ego, their own pride. That's what these people are about. They're not going to be benevolent dictators, as we can see on social media already. When this wave of burning and looting and killing are over in South Africa, there'll be nothing to look forward to but the next wave. South Africa began experiencing rolling blackouts in 2007 and has been battling them ever since. As a matter of fact, first time I interviewed Simon Roche years ago, that's what he was talking about, the power issues that were happening there. Now we're seeing it come here. Even the government says the blackouts will likely continue for at least 5 more years. Bet your money they will last even longer. Now, we can talk about these blackouts here in America as being the misapplication of climate panic and climate fear and all this other, this eco-porn that they push out to people. And that's true, but that's just a justification. What is fundamentally behind this is crony capitalism, corruption. We've seen here in Texas, where you have so much oil, you had massive subsidies, billions of dollars targeted specifically for the windmills, for example, and building a specific infrastructure just for them. Subsidies of people who are producing power from that. Whereas the already established industries that are out there, they're not giving any subsidies to. Just imagine if they were to invest money that they put in all the windmills and all the infrastructure dedicated to those windmills, if they were to use less money to modernize and to come up with more scrubbing technology to make the current facilities that are there more efficient or cleaner, right? If you wanted to take it from that standpoint. This is not even about any of the environmental fear. Just like the Paris Climate Accord is not about any environmental fear. And the people who are true believers in all this global warming and climate change and all the rest of that stuff have called out the hypocrisy of the Paris Climate Accord because they said you cannot allow the two biggest countries, India and China, to continue to grow in their to build as many power plants as they wish without any controls whatsoever to make them clean. You can't continue to do that and say that you're addressing global climate change or global warming. Those are the two biggest economies, and you're not doing anything about that? You're giving them carte blanche to do whatever they wish? No. This is simply about a redistribution of power and of wealth, to put those kinds of restrictions and reductions on the rest of the world while allowing India and China to continue to get dirtier and dirtier and bigger issues. So it is not, when we're looking at what is happening here in America, it is fundamentally an issue of theft, of corruption. It doesn't have anything to do with the justification. And the same thing is at play in South Africa. Because they're not justifying, what is happening with their power grid there is not being done, really, because of there is some justification everywhere where these types of things are being done for climate stuff. But the underlying issue here is one of crony capitalism. And I say that is the underlying issue here in Texas as well. It's crony capitalism. It's corruption. Listen, despite being the economic superpower of sub-Saharan Africa, South Africa's brain drain is significant and accelerating. Those who have the options of abandoning the country are doing so. More than 4% of all deaths are murders. That's how violent the place is. And again, that was what Simon Roche was saying. He said, if you look at the murder rate, it's some of the highest in the world already. But he said, if you look at the murder rate of white farmers, it is many times more what the overall murder rate is in South Africa, as escalated as it is. More than 4% of all deaths are murders, and the murder rate is somehow still rising. All right, and we're back. We had a computer crash here. I apologize. I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. I'm not sure how much at what point this went down. Basically, what I'm talking about is how the DNC here in America is simply just a rebranding of the African National Congress and their policies. Here's a good example of this. A policy known as the Broad-Based Black Economic Employment, the BBBEE. The BBBEE relies openly and explicitly on injecting racial preferences throughout the economy. Companies receive a BBBEE scorecard based on hiring black workers, elevating black management, giving black South Africans a share of ownership. Does this sound familiar? Remember the rolling blackouts in South Africa? Well, it turns out the public utility company there, Eskom, is one of the most aggressive adopters of this. I mean, they're like Coca-Cola, right? Except Coca-Cola is not making anything that we need, not like electricity. Eskom, as pointed out by the South African National Assemblywoman, Gwen Gwenya, described the outcome in her column. She explains how BBBEE has fueled the decay of South Africa's power utility at every step of the process. The country has two expensive botched power plants because Hitachi's African subsidiary secured contracts based on black empowerment criteria rather than actual expertise. Eskom has problems with coal supply because it gives favoritism to black-owned mining companies, even pushed foreign firms to divest from the country. In one case, the CEO of Westcoal resigned his position solely because he was a white CEO, and so they resigned their position there. So it's being allocated, and we see the same thing that is happening here in America. It is not about, and this is what they're inculcating in the schools, it's not about merit. It's simply about intersectionality. How many of these boxes of favored groups or disfavored groups do you check? And then we take action accordingly. Burdensome racial quota laws, writes Revolver, fall heaviest on small and up-and-coming businesses, while the largest megacorporations have the easiest time complying. Same as here. The DNC is the ANC. If a company is to be politically rewarded for handing out ownership based on race, why not gain even more security and let the politically connected into the ownership cast? If you have to hire unqualified hacks for senior management, why not give the jobs to politicians' children? As a matter of fact, you see the big push, they call it stakeholder capitalism, where the government wants to have representation on all the boards. And yet you still have people like Reason Magazine and others who say, well, we can't imagine that the government censorship is really an issue. I mean, this is private corporations that are doing this. It's like, how naive can you be to think that that's the case anymore in America? Corrupt behavior like this happens even in the best systems, but in South Africa, the country, it is by design, and it is by the design here with a Democrat National Convention, the same as the African National Congress, the ANC. South Africa's unemployment rate is at a record 32.6%. That is much higher than we ever experienced during the Great Depression. I started going back and looking at the unemployment rates during the Great Depression to compare them to what was imposed by Donald Trump's executive order last year. And we got pretty close in virtually zero time. And it was in the peak of the unemployment rates in America during the Great Depression. And it's been about a year since I've looked at the figures, so I'm maybe a little bit fuzzy on it. But I remember it was in the low 20%. We got pretty close to that in terms of real terms. And you understand that it was never reported that way, because the unemployment numbers are manipulated in the same way that the CDC figures are manipulated. CDC figures are manipulated for people who died from COVID, they say, and they're manipulating the CDC figures for people who are injured and killed by the vaccines in the same way that they manipulate the inflation numbers, the same way they manipulate the unemployment numbers. But when we were doing real calculation of unemployment, and if you look to people who are doing real calculation of unemployment rather than their arbitrary and manipulated definitions today that they use, it got pretty close to it, but it was, you know, in the low 20s. At the peak of the Great Depression, they're at 33% in South Africa right now. And the country's GDP per capita peaked in 2011 and has fallen by 25% since then. So this is not simply about what happened during COVID. It is much broader and longer term than that. As the country has broken down, race hate against white people isn't used to reduce inequality, but to increase inequality in the same way they do in America. One example of this, and this is also an amazing parallel between what is happening in South Africa and what is happening here, and that is that you have the globalist ruling class brings in people who are not native to the area to come in and to make things worse. You know, people like Sundar Pichai or Hamdi Ulukaya that I talked about last week, Jomani Yogurt, or many others. There are just a couple of examples. Or people like Nikki Haley. As the country has broken down, they had the Gupta family, Indian immigrants who arrived in 1993 to profit off the end of apartheid, writes Revolver. The Guptas soon built a close relationship with the now jailed Jacob Zuma. When Zuma became president, his actions benefited the Guptas to such a degree that it constituted state capture. In other words, they insinuated themselves in the same way as you have these big tech corporations, using companies that are overwhelmingly, you know, run by people who are immigrants and staffed with tech people who, in many cases, are coming from other countries that are hostile to America. And then when people pointed out that the Gupta family was tied into the government to deflect the criticism from himself, what he did was he started up an organization to point the finger at white people in South Africa. The Guptas employed a British PR firm to argue that South Africa's problem wasn't a corrupt family dynasty or a corrupt government that they were dealing with, but the white race that was hoarding resources from everyone else. One of the strategies was apparently to drive a predominantly social media narrative that, quote, white monopoly capital, unquote, The South African Communist Party and National Treasury have been standing in the way of transforming the South African economy. The phrase white monopoly capital has, over the past months, become a major feature of mainstream political discourse, with even President Zuma using it, they said, in the past. And the plan by this British PR firm reportedly involved using, among other things, Twitter bots to run a fake news campaign to support messages critical of white monopoly capital and to be defensive of the Guptas. That's how they deflect criticism. So we see inflation as a part of this, the types of spikes that we're using, the economic issues that are in the pipeline. Again, that is all part of the same game plan that we've seen roll out in South Africa by the communists, using communist people, again, globalists using communists to roll out their program, same way that they did in China, using the Communist Party, giving these party officials shares in these corporations, so embracing corruption, buying into these communist leaders to forward their globalist agenda. And then, of course, not like they did in China, but in South Africa, the parallel is even closer to what we're seeing here in America. So when we look at Twitter saying that government is demanding to remove tweets from journalists, and that has jumped by 26%, many people ask, well, which governments? Well, let me tell you, it's all of them. But it's especially the American government. You know, in India, you had a big campaign pushing back against the government's lockdown recently, and you saw the Indian government leaning very hard on Twitter to censor people. And yet, when you look at censorship, and Twitter said they received over 14,500 requests for information between July the 1st and December 31st of this last year, they said 30% of the requests were honored. They said India was the single largest source of all requests from governments, but guess who was number two? The United States. I would suggest to you that if we were to normalize this by population, India, I don't know how close, it doesn't give the number of requests from both India and the United States, but you know, India has 4.25 times the number of people in the U.S. So if you were going to normalize this by our population, we would easily be in first place. Not even a question about this. 199 verified journalists and news outlets on Twitter were subject to 361 legal demands to remove content. And Twitter is refusing to say which ones specifically. Such information requests can include governments or other entities asking for the identities of people who are tweeting under pseudonyms. So the Indian government, as they talked about that, they said they prevented people in India from viewing more than 50 tweets that appeared to criticize the administration's handling of the pandemic. You mean they only talked about 50 tweets? I've had two of my tweets affected by Twitter. Just alone. YouTube, of course, is censoring left and right. They've now reinstated a Chicago area school board meeting where parents opposed mask mandates. And, you know, you cannot have, according to Gulag, they don't want to have a situation showing parents talking back to the school board and offering facts and debating what the narrative, what the official story is. No, that cannot be seen on YouTube. And yet they push out the most absurd propaganda. Absolutely unbelievable what they push out. Big tech, says Biden, says his Surgeon General is killing people. This is a message that is coming out from everybody in the administration. And let me tell you, it's not just big tech. I think when Biden called out Facebook, and now Facebook came back and says, oh, the facts show that we're helping to save lives because we're pushing the Trump shots. We will not be distracted by accusations which are not supported by facts, said Facebook. The fact is that more than 2 billion people have viewed authoritative information about COVID-19. In other words, we're pushing your propaganda out there. Why are you kicking us? And then saying, more than 3.3 million Americans have also used our vaccine finder tool to find out where and how to get a vaccine. The facts show that Facebook is helping to save lives, period. Well, you know, I guess when I look at this, you know, they really have done a lot to try to help to push the authoritative information, the government's narrative, to push the Trump shots. I've opposed lockdowns, masks, vaccines, all these different mandates. I opposed them before they existed because I knew they were coming. Because this is what the people have always said. The people who imposed them on us have always said they were going to do it. We saw it being done in China before they did it here. So it wasn't a question that they were coming. The question was whether or not we were going to allow them to do this. And so since I opposed these things before they even came into existence, I guess I am a premeditated serial killer in the eyes of the Biden administration. But when Biden said, they're killing people. The only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated, and they're killing people. Now, is that a preparation for, you know, putting that out? They do subtle things like that to put that idea to unvaccinated people, killing people, unvaccinated are killing people, unvaccinated are killing people. I think there's an element of that. It could be that he just got the message garbled. Maybe he was supposed to say the unvaccinated are killing people, because this is a message that we've had given to us by the media elite in many different cases, right? Kathleen Sebelius, you have Geraldo Rivera directly saying that. We got to do something about these unvaccinated people, says Geraldo Rivera. They're going to kill my grandkids. We're no longer worried about killing grandma, right? I mean, that was what the statistics said from the CDC. They said if you were under 55, you had a statistically zero chance of dying from this so-called pandemic all last year. But now they flipped the script. They forgot to flip their statistics. They still don't have any statistics showing that COVID is a... They didn't bother to try to ramp that up. It would have been too hard for them to manipulate those numbers. You got people with the average age of 80, which is beyond life expectancy. It's easy for them to relabel people who are dying of many other normal causes, to relabel that as COVID and to call it a pandemic. But they don't have the numbers for the people who are dying at a young age. And so they still haven't made a case that it's a pandemic for the young people, but they're coming for them with the vaccines. The vaccines were given for emergency use authorization. There is no emergency for people who are young. No emergency whatsoever. So it is clearly should not be authorized for them. But they're continuing to push it down to younger and younger ages. And the narrative that is being put out there now is being flipped by people like Geraldo Rivera. So instead of saying that COVID is killing grandma, who was 80, 85, 90, whatever, beyond life expectancy, many, many comorbidities. Oh, it was COVID who killed her. And she died because you weren't following the orders from Fauci. Now they're flipping that script, and they're saying that if we don't get vaccinated, somehow in the future, we're going to kill his grandkids, Geraldo was saying, Geraldo Rivera. And so I think that this narrative, when Biden is putting that out there, the only pandemic is among the unvaccinated, and they are killing people. I don't think that's strictly really about Facebook, because they put out too much of this. Gayle King, Geraldo Rivera, Kathleen Sebelius, many of these people are talking about us killing kids. We are, as I've said many times, we're going to become, we're in the process now, they're beginning the vilification part phase of the Trump shots, and we're going to be the vermin that they have to vilify, and we are going to be the typhoid Marys, we're going to be the ones who are spreading disease. We're going to be the rats of the bubonic plague. You just wait until they start, people like Geraldo Rivera, people like this Surgeon General, they're going to start comparing us to the rats. Rather than seek to convince the skeptical, Biden wants to silence them and use these companies to control what is read and what is discussed about the pandemic. That's exactly right. Again, you know, that is the big warning sign, is that no debate is allowed. That these people who cannot win the debate, these people who have nothing other than the ability to monopolize free speech. And that's why I harp on free speech. I don't harp on this free speech issue, folks, simply because I'm in journalism or reporter. This is not even really about the free press, because most of the free press is not free. It is bought and paid for. This is about your free speech. This is about your ability to talk back to government, to talk about government, to discuss, to debate, to examine, to be skeptical. The essence of science is skepticism. If you don't have skepticism, you don't have science. And so when this escalates, you have this Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, who goes on with CNN, and you have Dana Bash say, well, okay, if Facebook is killing people, is Fox News killing people too? Because, you know, misinformation is killing people, and we know that anybody that disagrees with me, that's misinformation. I don't need to debate them. I just label them, right? And so she says, President Biden did accuse social media platforms of killing people, said Dana Bash on CNN. And she asked the Surgeon General, do you think conservative media like Fox News are doing the same? Are they killing people too with rhetoric like you've just heard? You played a clip for him. And he said, Dana, I think all of us, including the media, individuals, health professionals, have a responsibility to share the truth about health as science dictates. Now, let's hold that phrase there. As science dictates. Let me say something. Science doesn't dictate anything. Dictators dictate. He's trying to personalize this as if science is a person dictating to us. Because their understanding of science is authority figures. And I've talked about this before in terms of Francis Bacon when he formalized the scientific method. He distinguished between two different things, empiricism and scholasticism. And what we have known as science, based on the scientific method, based on what Francis Bacon said, he rejected scholasticism. What is that? Well, that is academia, or authoritarian, authoritative figures putting out the information. In other words, relying on venerable sources, on authority figures to give you the answer. When you are doing that, and that's exactly what these people are doing when they say, well, this is what science dictates. Now, the people who are dictating it are the people who are in academia, the people who are in government, the people who are in the military-industrial complex, or, as Eisenhower said, the academic military-industrial complex. It is scholasticism is fixed. Scholasticism is immovable. Scholasticism is unchallengeable because you can't challenge these people, these institutions. They will tell you what is true and what isn't. And that's the whole mindset that comes out of somebody like this Surgeon General, Murphy, saying, science dictates. Yeah, well, that's Murphy's Law, isn't it? Unless we are honest, he said, about the consequences of our communication with people, unless we are rigorous about ensuring that what we communicate is actually sourced from science and not from an opinion on critical issues like the vaccine. Well, how do you source stuff from science? When Francis Bacon got involved, that was the first thing that he attacked was arguments from authority figures, scholasticism. He put out empiricism, made that the basis of science. That's why when you have science classes, you would have labs, and you would verify what somebody had told you. You know, you take something that was, and I really used to chafe at all this. It's like, this is really pretty obvious, and it's been proven. Oh, no, but you have to get used to the scientific method. You have to challenge and reproduce this and convince yourself that this is true, and not just accept the fact that it's true because it's in the textbooks or it is the establishment's viewpoint. You have to go through the process of doing this experiment yourself to verify that for yourself. It's like, okay, they really hammered that. And I believe that. It's a pain in the neck. It's a lot easier just to go ask somebody and then just run with whatever they do. But with empiricism, It's based upon observations. It's based upon experimentation. It's based upon debate, because science, if it's truly science, is never settled. Science is not decided by the majority of authority figures. It's not decided by the people who are in the highest office, the people who are head of the NIH, like Fauci, or he's not head of the NIH, but his little infectious disease corner of the world. Science is not decided by somebody like that. It is decided by observations, by being able to look at and examine the data. But what happens to people who look at and examine the data? They're vilified, they're canceled, they're fired. That tells you everything that you need to know about this fake pandemic. This pandemic cannot withstand scrutiny. These people are panicking about this everywhere. What they're trying to do, their focus now, is to silence any debate, any questioning of authority. Science is not a man. Science is not an institution. Science is observation, debate, examination. And that is what they're shutting down. They're shutting down real science. And then Psaki, press secretary for Biden, says, we're regularly making sure that social media platforms are aware of the latest narrative dangerous to public health that we and many other Americans are seeing across all of social and traditional media. Let me tell you, public health is garbage. There's no such thing as public health. And these public health officials are involved in protecting themselves, not in protecting you. Public health is a fiction of their imagination. There are individuals who have health, and there are individuals who have individualized health needs. A one-size-fits-all should be rejected categorically. Informed consent is what we have to have. We have to support the rights of the individuals, especially in healthcare issues. And this is what you're seeing from the people in France. You got people say, I've had every vaccine ever that's come down the pike. But when these people tell me I've got to take a vaccine, I refuse to do that. That's why I've said that even if I believed that this vaccine was 100% safe and 100% effective, and I don't believe that anywhere close to that, but even if I believed it was 100% safe and effective, if these people were to lie to us, if they were going to censor speech, if they were going to bribe us, intimidate us, twist our arms, and then dictate to us that we had to have this in order to live our lives, I would say, I'm not going to take it, even if I wanted to take it. Even to save my life, I would refuse to take this. Because it is a path to slavery. We are setting up, even if you believe these things are safe and effective, you are establishing a pattern of behavior that is going to be used to enslave and to dictate every aspect of our life to us. That is the precedent that is being set in the name of public health, rejecting individual health, subsuming the individual to the hive. So Psaki goes on to say, we're making sure that social media platforms are aware of the latest narratives that are dangerous. To what? To the bureaucracy. To the public health bureaucracy and their narrative and their agenda. She said there's about 12 people who are producing 65% of the anti-vaccine misinformation on social media platforms. She also said the White House is encouraging social media companies to alter their algorithms to promote quality information, quote unquote, and for platforms to act in unison to ban certain people. So they have an agenda. They're going to promote that. They're going to silence everything else. That's why I said the essence of what is being done to us is it is vital for their lies and for their ability to gaslight the public. As I've said many times, the only science involved here is behavioral science, psychological manipulation, and it's being done through a controlled media and controlled press. And that's why this is how this is more important than just the free press, more important than free speech. It is how they control populations through speech. The founders of this country understood that. That is why that is in the First Amendment. Psaki also said the White House is encouraging social media companies to alter their algorithms to promote quality information, stuff that we like. and for them to act in unison. You should not be banned from one platform and not from others. So if one platform bans you, all of them need to ban you. They all need to act together as a mob, as a collective mob. And who is directing this collective mob of control and censorship of free speech? They just admitted it's them. This is the advantage of having Democrats in government. If it was Republicans, they pretend that it's not coming from them. And the Democrats have for a while as well. The Democrats have such a statist mindset that they're shameless in their tyranny. And they don't feel that they need to cover up. And this actually helps us a bit to understand what's going on. The big danger of Trump was that people thought that he was on their side, and he wasn't. The big danger of Trump was that he would talk about freedom, that he would hide the oppression. They don't hide it. Biden is upfront about it. As I said many times, when we have a war, we treat spies and traitors amongst our midst. We treat them more severely than we do people who are wearing a uniform of the other side and flying their flag openly to identify themselves as where they're coming from and as a combatant. The spy will dress as one of you. The spy will flatter you. The spy will tell you what you want to hear. The spy will stab you in the back. The spy will act like Donald Trump. A Trump lawyer, John Cole, said that litigation will prove that social media companies are government actors, and therefore the First Amendment does apply to their actions. Well, now we're seeing it, right? But let me say this. Again, the Trump administration could have filed a lawsuit against these people. They knew it all along. He didn't, did he? And he waited several months until after he got out. But this is not even the point. We know that the government is directing this. The government directed it under Trump. The government actually aided, you know, we're talking about the digital public square. The government actually aided in the creation of the digital public square. They created these companies. They helped to finance these companies, to protect these companies. They made sure that only the companies that were going to put out their model of the digital public square, that were going to be cooperative with them in terms of surveillance and censorship, only those companies were allowed to compete, very much like our elections. You don't get to compete in the elections unless they already know that they can control you. And so there were a lot of different companies that did compete. I mean, there was real competition that was going on, just like there's real competition. These politicians hate each other. The Democrats and Republicans hate the people in the other party, and they hate the people in their own party, and they compete against the people in their own party, as we've seen in spades this last time, right? But they will all serve their common master. And that is exactly what happened with the creation of the digital public square. Now, the problem I have is not that we're suddenly coming to the realization that these people are really government actors, that the government is telling them behind the scenes what is happening. They were created by the government to do exactly this. And I pointed that out. For 25 years, they've been working on creating this digital public square, funding the companies that are going to control it for people. No. The real issue, which is still not being talked about by Trump, is the fact that the role of government is to protect our free speech. See, the dangerous thing that we take away from this is that the government should not be allowed to do censorship, but private corporations should. That is the lie that is being sold to us by Reason Magazine. That's the lie that's being sold to us by the Cato Institute, the libertarian side. It's also the lie that's being sold to us by conservatives, by the largest conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, invited to the Rose Garden free speech nonsense that Trump did. It was just a dog and pony show. These people have supported the right of major corporations to steal your God-given liberties. The purpose of government, according to our founding document and the founding principles of this country, the Declaration of Independence, the purpose of government and the view of the founders of this country was that we all have inherent rights because we are created in the image of God. Those rights are inalienable. That means that government can't take them, but it also means that Corporations cannot take them either. Our fundamental rights to free speech, the free exercise of religion, you name it, those are every bit as fundamental as our rights to property. And even more so, I would argue. Would anybody argue that a corporation can come in and just take your car without any due process? They have to have a good reason. They have to go before government. Government acts as a referee, supposedly, in the due process. But there is no due process required for these corporations to steal your God-given fundamental liberties. That has to change. Nobody is even talking about that issue. The real issue is that the purpose of government is to defend our liberties. That's also in the opening paragraph of the Declaration of Independence. That to protect these liberties, government, these God-given liberties, government is instituted among men. And so the First Amendment is not simply about prohibiting government from stealing from us, but then allowing government to set by and let big corporations or other individuals steal from us. No, that is not to be tolerated. And so the whole point of this is, yet again, you see Trump and his organization appealing to the judicial branch to get these things fixed when they would take no action themselves. And the appeal to the judicial branch you're going to find in this particular lawsuit, I will predict that it's going to go the same direction as his fundraiser to challenge the election results after the election. He raised $250 million for himself and the RNC, but they did nothing. And he could have easily prevented that fraud in advance while he was president. He allowed it. He laid the foundation for the lockdown election, the mail-in election. So he laid all of that there, and then after the fact, he fundraised on it. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? The same MO now being done about free speech that the Trump administration did about the election. And I think it is nothing other than a grifting operation, a fundraising operation. The White House admits to flagging the posts to be censored by Facebook, as a headline from Jonathan Turley. He said, and I just read that to you, he says it's really problematic that they're saying that they're looking at problematic posts, that things that, quote, spread disinformation, as Psaki said. They're coordinating this, and they want to coordinate the censorship, openly admitting what they're doing. Jonathan Turley, a lawyer, says the concern is obvious that this allows for a direct role of the government and a massive censorship program run by private companies. That's always been the case. And he gives an example of how upfront and open the Democrats are about this. So the Republicans will pretend that they support free speech in principle, but they will do nothing about it, as we've seen with Marco Rubio. But when you have hearings in terms of the Democrats, Jack Dorsey from Twitter, a CEO there, apologized for censoring the Hunter Biden story before the election. However, listen to the response of two Democrat senators, one of them, Senator Chris Coons, who then pressed Dorsey to censor, to expand the categories of censored material, to prevent people from sharing any views that he considered to be climate denialism. So Jack Dorsey goes in and he says, well, you know, we censored the stories about Hunter Biden, and that was wrong because that interfered with the election. The response of the Democrats are, we want you to do more of that, though, actually. We want you to start censoring people about climate news, right? Because we've got climate science, and if you disagree with them, you are not a skeptic. You are an infidel because it's a religion to them. So climate denialism. And then you had another Democrat senator, Richard Blumenthal. He said, I'm concerned that your company is backsliding or retrenching, that you are failing to take action against dangerous disinformation. Will you commit to the same kind of robust content moderation playbook in this coming election, including the fact-checking, the labeling, the reducing the spread of misinformation, and other steps, even for politicians in the runoff elections ahead? And as Jonathan Turley points out, he says, yeah, robust content modification is the new Orwellian rally cry in our society. These people want to do this openly. They have no shame about it. This is a lawless government that is does not hesitate to embrace Orwellianism and to reject the Constitution. And so Jonathan Turley says, this is why I have described myself as an internet originalist. What does he mean by that? He said, rather than going in and making some changes in the Section 230 stuff, he says the alternative is to go back to internet originalism. No censorship. Just no censorship. Right? These people, whether they are Marco Rubio saying, well, you're going to censor the Chinese for us, aren't you? Or the Democrats saying, you're going to censor the Republicans for us, aren't you? Or you're going to censor the people who are talking about the pandemic or the vaccines or the climate denial. You're going to censor those people when we tell you to, right? And you're going to coordinate this with other people, right? No, let's just go back to saying, you're not going to do any censorship. Let's have one rule. Let's just say, no censorship. Let's just make it clear that the First Amendment applies to everything and to everyone. You don't get to censor us. If somebody says something libelous or slanders you or something, you have a legal process to take care of that. But otherwise, the purpose of government is to protect our free speech. Jonathan Turley says, if social media companies returned to their original roles, there would be no slippery slope of political bias or opportunism. They would assume the same status as a telephone company. I love his analogy here. Listen to Jonathan Turley's analogy of the telephone company compared to social media. He said, we don't need companies to protect us from harmful or misleading thoughts. If Pelosi demanded that Verizon or Sprint interrupt your phone calls to stop people who are saying false or misleading things, the public would be outraged. That's exactly the case. Think about that. If we were to have, you know, was a laugh-in operator, Lily Tomlin. Yeah, one ringy-dingy, one. She's sitting there eavesdropping the entire time. The old-fashioned phone switch bank, you know, where they could listen to what you were saying. What if we had somebody like that on each one of our conversations? What if Lily Tomlin, the phone operator, were to jump in there whenever we said something that she disagreed with. And let's say that she just muted us and then talked over us and corrected it. Because that's what we're talking about with social media. But let me tell you, there's another analogy here that Jonathan Turley does not get into. And that is when we look at surveillance and we look at what James Clapper and these other people have been doing with geospatial intelligence, with human domain analytics, with activity-based intelligence, and all the rest, by design, that was what the internet was ultimately created for, to manipulate us psychologically and to monitor us. And so if we understand what is happening with this, it goes back to the first, why we have the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, because the phone company was being used to not necessarily listen to each and every one of our conversations, but they were used essentially to collect what was the equivalent of metadata back in the day. They called it a PIN search warrant. So they could go in and they could create a list. They could easily get a list from the phone company, everybody that called you and everybody that you called. The post office has been doing that from its inception as well. They call it a mail cover order. And now the phone company or the post office has got their little iSpy program, or you know, their iCop, they call it, where they start looking at social media. But these types of things, looking at who you're sending mail to and who you're receiving mail from, who you're phoning and who you're getting phone calls from, that goes back to the inception of the post office, but it also goes back primarily to the inception of the CIA and the NSA, and that's why you had the Church hearings in the Senate and the Pike hearings in the House of Representatives, because the phone company was doing that, and the fiction that they operated under was that because you decided that you were going to do business with a phone company, a private entity, the phone company could do anything that they wished in terms of that information, that they owned that information about you. Because you voluntarily contracted with them, and because they're a private company, they can do whatever they want, including spying on you for the government without a search warrant. Now, we have the same type of thing that is happening now with the social media companies and the rest. The same legal fiction the same legal fiction principle is being applied across the board for surveillance. It's just a lot more detailed in terms of the technology that is involved here. And that's the real analogy, because you never had the phone company, they would have to get a search warrant to do a wiretap, but they could get a lot more information without a wiretap by just putting that out there. And that's one of the reasons why they pushed so hard with CISPA, trying to put that through several times. SOPA, ACTA, PIPA, all these different government agencies in the U.S. and Europe putting in these various operations, they eventually are able to get CISA through. But the P that is missing there, nothing really changed about it. The P was about protection. And it was not about protecting your privacy. It was not about protecting due process. It was about protecting the companies from being sued for spying on you, for turning the information over in the same way that the phone companies were doing for the CIA and the NSA back in their inception in the 50s and 60s, that they were prohibited from doing in the FISA Act that came out in the 70s. And what we saw them doing, as Rand Paul accurately described it, getting a blanket search warrant for Mr. and Mrs. Verizon. So they just go to this secret FISA court, and they use it as a legal cover, as a legal prevarication, to do blanket searching of metadata for everybody. Nothing has changed with these people. Mike Lee says, this looks an awful lot like a First Amendment violation. He says, look, the government can't censor speech. The First Amendment makes that very clear. We all agree about that. This is where we disagree, however, even with Mike Lee. See, I disagree with Mike Lee. I disagree with Rand Paul. I disagree with even the people who are speaking out against this are doing it for the wrong reasons and not and allowing an escape clause that is the essence of what is being done. He says a private for-profit corporation can make its own decisions. But when it's doing that in collusion with the government, it starts to look to me an awful lot like a First Amendment violation. Let's just call this out for what it is. Let's say that the government, let's understand the government has the duty to protect our rights. As I said before, the Declaration of Independence, it was recognized by the 1946 Marsh versus Alabama. If you're going to have a digital public square, even if it is privately owned, it is the same as that privately owned public square back in Alabama in 1946. And the government understood then, because the government understood the purpose of government in America. They understood the founding principles of America. They said the purpose, our purpose here as the Supreme Court, is to make sure that we protect somebody's free speech from a government, from a private entity that would steal it. But we've now seen them use this for the longest period of time to establish the protection of a private agency to shut down debate in elections. And that's exactly how they've run it. That's how I know how I recognize this scam, because I've watched this scam play out since the late 1980s. First they did it in elections, and now they're doing it on social media. You know, they would say, well, the debate is being run by a private organization. And so therefore, that private organization is going to do what we tell them to do, because a private organization was put in place by the Republicans and Democrats. And guess what the private organization wants to do? Limit the debates to Republicans and Democrats. They did that with the presidential debates after Ross Perot got in. They would set up a private organization funded, run by the Republicans and Democrats, and they would set up their arbitrary gatekeepers to come up with a set of rules that made it impossible for anybody who was a third party or an independent to qualify to get into the debates. And that's exactly what they seek to do. The government should stop telling Facebook to suppress COVID misinformation, says Reason. Finally. This is getting so obvious that even Reason, that has been a diehard defender of the rights of corporations to do whatever they wish to you and I as individuals. Reason Magazine is finally having a problem with this, because just like Mike Lee, they say, oh, you know, it looks like they're directing it. They've always been directing it. But they don't have the right, these corporations do not have the right to do it, even if they're not being directed and told to do this behind closed doors by government officials. We have all the power and the responsibility to confront health misinformation, tweeted out the Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. Well, let me tell you something. The uncomfortable truth is that there is no authority. He says he's got power and he's got responsibility. You notice I didn't say he had authority, right? What's the difference with that? That was a discussion that I had over the weekend with an interview that we got into talking about power and responsibility. But power and authority, I should say. But, you know, this he doesn't say authority because, you know, there is no authority in the Constitution for even him to even have an office of Surgeon General. There's no authority for that office. There's no authority for this person to even have a podium there. There's no authority for his organization to exist. He certainly doesn't have the authority to confront health misinformation. He does have a lot of power. He has the ability to do it, but he has usurped the authority to do that. He doesn't have legitimate authority to do any of this. He has no authority to censorship me, to censor me or anybody else. The federal government is not explicitly ordering tech platforms to take down content, says Reason Magazine. They're not doing it explicitly. They're just implying it. But these dictates are essentially strong-worded suggestions. Oh, they're starting to get an idea at Reason Magazine here, right? But you'd be forgiven if you think that Psaki's summary of the report sounded like a command. Oh, yes. Well, let's just call it what it is. Let's stop prevaricating around the bush, Reason. I mean, you can play all the games you want to with semantics. This is a distinction without a difference. Of course, the government itself has spread plenty of medical misinformation, says Reason Magazine. From the early bad guidance on masks to White House coronavirus czar Fauci, deliberate misstatement about herd immunity threshold. For months, the government health officials treated the lab leak theory of COVID-19 as a wild conspiracy theory. By the way, the top Biden officials are now embracing the COVID lab leak theory that people were kicked off of social media for, vilified for saying it. So now it's true. Why? Well, they didn't do an investigation. Nothing convinced them. It's just, you know, other people did the investigation. Other people took the hits for that. And the truth is inescapable. And so now they are finally admitting it, right? So now it's true. That's how this all evolves when we have these people dictating to us. One person said, I was a lab technician myself. This is actually Tedros. He says, I was a lab technician myself. I'm an immunologist, and I have worked in the lab, and lab accidents happen. Of course they do. I covered that a great deal. And it's one of the reasons why you don't do gain-of-function research. That's why that should be stopped, because you always have accidents in labs. So don't do useless but dangerous experiments. That's always been the argument against that. But when you look at what is being proposed, now Josh Hawley, Reason Magazine, is upset because Josh Hawley and others are attempting to punish these private companies for not doing what the White House wants. It says in Hawley's case, he wants Facebook to suppress fewer posts. You see how they put that in there? So Reason Magazine does not want free speech. What they're saying is that the government says you're not going to censor people. Oh, that's an imposition on the rights of corporations. And corporations are people, and corporations, big corporations, are big people who have bigger rights than you do, right? That's the position of libertarians and conservatives for the most part right now. They're people, and they have their big people. They're important people, and you're not. And we don't have a level playing field, do we? And so they're criticizing Hawley for saying, we just need to have free speech. And you're being a hypocrite because you're criticizing Psaki for saying, we want you to censor people. But you're just as bad because you're saying, we don't want you to censor people. No. This is the crazy world in which we live in the 21st century, where libertarians don't understand, where libertarians don't support free speech and natural rights. But, you know, this happens when you cut the bonds of that really establish these rights. And that as that's our Christian understanding of people created in the image of God. You start to cut those bonds and start to talk about natural rights, and you start to worship Ayn Rand. That's where this all winds up going. To give you a double down from Amy Klobuchar, who, if she had been a different skin color, would have been the vice president, clearly, because she had a much better temperament than Kamala Harris. and the two of them equally unqualified to have the office. But, well, I would say at least Amy Klobuchar is an American citizen. She qualifies under the Constitution, which Kamala Harris does not. But anyway, not in the, as a natural born citizen. But Klobuchar says, take this crap off of their platforms, she says, talking about social media. In an interview, she added that many people who refused to take the vaccine were getting their information from posts on Facebook. In addition, she claimed that most of the people who have died from COVID-19 died after the vaccine rollout. Well, wait a minute. I thought that's kind of a problem because, you know, the narrative from the Democrats was that Trump killed everybody, right? How many times have you heard that? Oh, Trump killed whatever the magic number is, 600,000, but it's probably a million now, whatever, people. They all died because of Trump because he didn't do what Fauci said quickly enough, right? And now they're saying, now she's saying, well, people died after the vaccine rollout. See, these people who are liars just can't keep their story straight. She said, I think we also should look at changing the liability standards when it comes to vaccine misinformation. Now, this is saying, let's make some legal penalties for people that say things that I disagree with, that contradict the government's official story. And I think this is especially troubling when we start talking about liability, because understand that the person that Biden put in at HHS is Javier Becerra. What did he do? Well, he is, it began with Kamala Harris, and then when she became senator, he took over for her. But the two of them went after the Center for Medical Progress. We want to talk about people killing? We want to talk about people killers? Let's talk about Planned Parenthood. Let's talk about their murder for hire program, where you had people like Fauci and the NIH, and you had the FDA saying we want fresh, not frozen particular organs, like a liver of a baby of a certain age, and they would do that contract for murder with Planned Parenthood. When that was exposed, what did Kamala Harris and Javier Becerra, who's now HHS secretary, what did they do? Well, they went after the people who were reporting this and trying to put them in prison for reporting it. And that's now what Amy Klobuchar is essentially talking about. We need to change the liability standards when it comes to vaccine misinformation. You know, they have been emboldened by this, and maybe they'll use the same tactic. If we expose the killers in the pharmaceutical industry, perhaps they will come after those of us who are blowing the whistle and exposing the information. I think that's exactly what they plan to do. I think that's why Biden put in a lawyer at the head of HHS. Trump put in the former CEO of Eli Lilly, big pharmaceutical company, heavily connected in Washington. He put him in to develop the vaccine, the Trump shots. And now we have the lawyer who is going to take the next step. It is a professional wrestling tag team match between Trump and Biden. There's absolutely no reason they shouldn't be able to monitor this better and take this crap off their platforms that are basically telling people, oh, hey, there's problems. Well, we know the science proves that there isn't. They haven't done any science. They haven't done the tests. She also goes on to say, we can pass voting rights and call it election infrastructure, and we can make it part of the infrastructure bill because we can say this is election infrastructure. So she redefines science, and now they're going to redefine infrastructure, which is where we began the program, redefining what a shark attack is. See, you just give it a different name. I'm going to give you an order. I'm going to give you a dictate, and I'm going to call it science. And now I'm going to push through a federal takeover of elections, and I'm going to call it part of an infrastructure bill. These are the lies coming from Amy Klobuchar, Democrat Senator of Minnesota. There's many ways to proceed here, she said, including the upcoming infrastructure packages because, you know, they're blocked with this For the People Act, the very first piece of legislative bill that came out of the Democrats this time to take over every aspect of election and to federalize it. She said, for the process to be clear, there is no substitute, though, for the For the People Act. There just isn't. She said, the For the People Act is grounded in the Constitution that says that Congress can set and alter federal rules for elections. Actually, no, not at all. So when we look at this, when we come back, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to take a look at some of the COVID misinformation that is being pushed by these people. And, of course, today is, and I don't know how it's working out for the people in the UK today, July 19th is supposed to be Freedom Day. Freedom Day in the UK. Freedom Day in the UK rhymes. Yeah, Boris is a poet and you don't know it. So we're going to look and see if they actually got Freedom Day there. We got some people who are pushing back pretty hard in France and in Greece. They're telling people they can't sing. So now they're going to be putting Zorba the Greek into handcuffs and lock him up. We'll be right back.
Has your news been censored, banned over and over again? Has vital information been held prisoner by mainstream and anti-social media? It's the duty of every thinking person to make the great escape to thedavidknightshow.com. There you'll find links to live streams, videos, audio podcasts, and support links. Live stream the show at DLive and Trovo every Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern. Videos at BitChute and YouTube. New audio podcast, The Real David Knight Show, at Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, iHeart, Spotify, and more. But even though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, without your support, the show will run out of gas. The links to support the show are at thedavidknightshow.com. To donate via Subscribestar, donate via or donate via Cash App, Bitcoin, or P.O. Box. Our sincere thanks to all of you who have stood with us to get this far. Please don't forget to share the links and pray for the country as well as our family.
All right, and I just want to remind people that we have now the program is being carried by APS Radio News. They also have a music channel there, APS Radio Music. We're also on Aftermath.fm as a live stream. So we welcome those visitors, those listeners who are visiting with us today as well. So thank you to those outlets, and we thank you for your support. Let me just talk about a couple of things that I've received in the mail here and a couple of prayer requests that I'd like to pass on. They sent the information to me, and they didn't ask but I'm not going to violate their privacy. I'm going to be general enough. But I think that we need to put this out because there's a lot of people, a lot of Christians who listen to this program. And if you're a Christian, you know the power of prayer. You know that this is real. And we have seen that many, many times in our life. Prayer is not something that we demand from God. God is not a genie in a bottle that we just give him commands. Many times we do not get what we want because God sees the bigger picture. And even if it is something that is very difficult for us to go through, he may have a purpose in mind for us going through that that works for our good. It also may be something that many times in my life when I experienced something that was very difficult, I could not understand it at the time. But given sufficient time, I started to look back and say, you know, if things had gone the way that I thought was the right way, if they'd gone in an easier way, it would not nearly be as good as what actually happened to me. But God also, and this is one of the paradoxes, I should say, there's so many different things that we don't understand that seem to be contradictory that God would ask us to ask him. Why would he do that? Because we many times we have seen God, when we asked for something, we have seen that prayer answered in a way that could not be explained by circumstances. Absolutely could not be. And so that's a very powerful thing. And so that's one of the main reasons that we do pray for people. And so I want to mention, first of all, a couple of prayer requests. Martin in New York about a job. He's had a lot of issues with this pandemic. And He contacted us, and there was some good news that he's now been scheduled for an interview. But I would like to just put that out there for people who are inclined to pray. And also a new mother who is having issues with her family. Her husband and she have a different idea about vaccines for the baby, COVID vaccines for the baby. And so she has asked for prayer about that. They're at loggerheads with this. And so I would suggest prayer for both the baby's safety and also for reconciliation and their relationship, because this is something that is going to be very divisive with families. That's one of the reasons that they're doing this, is intentionally to divide society between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. And that includes down to the family level. You've seen Gayle King say, well, I'm not having any relatives who are unvaccinated coming in for the holidays come Thanksgiving and this sort of thing. So I just want to mention that. Also, I had a supporter who sent me a book, The Bible's Answer to Addiction. This is Alan B. Lentini. I'll mention that since he wrote the book that this came in. He said that he appreciates this, I'm sorry, I was reading a different note here. This is the one from Martin, who was looking for the job interview. Sorry. He said, in an update, he said he'd gotten an interview for an email, but he said, and he actually sent $10, even though he was unemployed and is suffering from economic issues. And I just want to say to people, I really do appreciate that support, but we're making this free, not putting it behind a firewall, because I know that a lot of people are going through difficult times like this. But he said, your voice is as important to me as food. Well, I appreciate that, but I want you to take care of your needs first. We trust that we'll be here as long as God would like for us to be here. But I do like this. This is a great idea. The Bible does have an answer to addiction. You know, we've seen some of the most effective programs in terms of addiction, Alcoholics Anonymous and things, vaguely talking about a higher power. They wanted to keep it non-sectarian, so they did not explicitly talk about Christianity. But I tell you that the answer to effective change in your life is the power of God, the power of the Holy Spirit in your life, and people need to understand that. There is something there that changes the way that you live your life, that allows you to, it changes what you want, and it also gives you power to make those changes. So that's very important. I really do appreciate him putting this out. He said in his church, they found that as they had a show of hands in one particular meeting, how many people were struggling of one kind of addiction or another, things that they could not control, most of the hands went up. So that's something we all need to think about. So I want to thank the people who have been supporting us with this. Let's talk a little bit about America Held Hostage. And, of course, it's not just America, it's the world, and the same agenda is being put everywhere around the world. As I've said many times, I believe the thing that woke up many of the churches, especially some of the big churches, some of the small churches were awake from the very beginning of this and refused to comply. And I interviewed a lot of them at the beginning. But some of the others were trying to, they had a bad interpretation of, bad understanding, I think, of where the lines of authority are drawn between Christians and the church, and what the misunderstanding about what we as Christians are supposed to obey. And I think the thing that really turned it around for people was late in this, in July, after people realized that I don't see any pandemic except in the news reports, they kept escalating these issues, as we're now seeing again, still escalating. After 492 days, they're still escalating the restrictions, even though the virus is not escalating. Although the virus is escalating among the vaccinated, and we'll talk about that in just a second. But the thing that really woke people up, I think, was when they started banning singing. Said, you know, you can wear the mask, you can social distance, you can reduce the capacity, I think, but you still can't sing. Oh, really? Okay, I think we're done now at this point. And now, on the island of Mykonos in Greece, the government there has banned music. Music of all forms. I mean, this is not, this is playing recorded music out of speakers even, and restaurants and other places. No music anywhere. This is the kind of over-the-top power trip that these people are engaged in. I think this is a perfect example of this. They're also on that island. They have now decided, this is being done by the Civil Protection Ministry. That's what they call their public health people. They're going to restrict movement between the hours of 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning. Because, you know, that's the witching hour for the COVID virus. You can't get sick unless you're out there between 1 and 6 in the morning, evidently. The mayor of this island was not happy about this because he thought it was unfair. They were the only island singled out for this. Why? Because this island is a party island, known for having a lot of visitors. And so he said, Mykonos cannot be the only island where music won't be heard. The only thing this will achieve is that visitors will go to another island, he said on Facebook. Listen to the rationale that the government has for banning music. Again, this is not because singing or blowing through a musical instrument is going to be pushing air out. No, it's nothing at all to do with that. The government in Greece, listen to the science, quote-unquote, behind this one. The government in Greece is banning all music in restaurants and bars across the country to avoid people having to get close to one another to be heard. Well, maybe they could hear the shouting in the streets of France as you had thousands of people, says AP, protesting against vaccination. Well, actually, it's 100,000. And that was the headline in some outlets, but AP buried it in the story. They began the story. They didn't bury it, but they didn't have it in the headlines. They began by saying over 100,000 people protested across France on Saturday. In Paris, separate protest marches by the far right and the far left wound through different parts of the city. Demonstrations also held in Strasbourg, in Marseille, in Lyon, as well as many smaller centers. And it unified people like the Yellow Vest protesters and others. Even though they say, you know, the left and the right are different areas, this is something that, again, we all need to unite and to oppose. Liberty, freedom should unite us all. Listen to what some of the people said. Now, of course, they focus on one guy who has been a protege of Marine Le Pen after calling him right-wing, far-right, right-right, 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 so many different times. This guy, Florian Philippot, I think is maybe the way you pronounce his name. Philippot has organized small but regular protests against the government's handling of the coronavirus crisis, but Saturday's demonstration drew a larger and more diverse crowd of people. Again, people are being united by their fight for liberty. People disaffected with these politics. You had Yellow Vest activists angry over economic injustice, far-right supporters, including medical staff, and I guess medical staff are now far-right. Why? Because in 2 months, they're going to require healthcare workers to get the vaccine. Again, why, as I said last week, if it's a medical emergency, why are you waiting 2 months to do this? This is about boiling the frogs slowly. And that's what they're doing. I will never get vaccinated, said a 53-year-old town councilor. He said, people need to wake up. And another person said, a 28-year-old retail shop manager, said he wasn't anti-vaccine, but he thought that everybody should be able to do as they please with their own body. Quote, the government is going too far. His 26-year-old friend, Elise, said, I am vaccinated against diphtheria, tetanus, and polio, but COVID vaccine is just too experimental. In other words, as I said, even if I believed it was 100% safe and effective, I would not take it because they're demanding it. there is only one solution, however, said the Prime Minister, Jean Castex. He said, there's only one solution, vaccination. It protects us, and it will make us free. He went on to say, slavery is freedom. War is peace, and all the rest of the Orwellian maxims. At Saturday's Paris protest, a 39-year-old Green Party supporter and a hospital lab worker said she might resort to buying a fake vaccination certificate to avoid losing her job. She said, this is an act of violence. to force people to get vaccinated. Good for her. You're going to find a big black market for these things, by the way, especially in France, because the penalties, and again, it's no emergency. They're going to wait until September the 15th to force this on medical crew. And think about that. We have the mob, you know, we have the government mob, and we have a majority of people in this country, as well as in France, who decided that the medical staff all need to be forced to take a vaccine. Even doctors and nurses should not be allowed to have informed consent. Think about that. You know, this is socialized medicine in the extreme, that nobody gets to make a choice, not even the doctors, you know, because of science and because of medicine. They don't get to make a choice. The mob will make that choice for them. And if you violate that choice that they're forcing upon you in France, you can get up to 6 months in jail and a 10,000 euro violation if you go into one of these public areas after these mandates from Macron kick in. And if you are a business that allows people to come in, they will give you a 45,000 euro fine and up to a year in jail. So you can get 6 months in jail and 10,000 euro fine if you are the individual, if you're the business, 1 year in jail and a €45,000 fine. They're going to require negative COVID tests within 24 hours for some European arrivals. This has previously been a 48-hour period of time. So now they're restricting that even further. You see how they're tightening the noose gradually. As I pointed out, free tests are going to end at the end of August, I believe it is. But they're saying, you know, you can either get vaccinated or you can take a test, and you're going to have to test all the time. And so they're making the time that your test lasts shorter and shorter to make sure that you got to have more and more frequently, be tested more and more frequently. And then they're going to start charging you for the tests in a couple of weeks. See how that works? That's right. They're going to do everything. It's going to be gradual, and then they hit you with a mandate. 34,000 Australians cannot get back home into their own country. But as I pointed out earlier in the broadcast, you got Bruce Jenner as part of the celebrity Big Brother freak show that they're running on television there, welcomed into the country, shipped in for the purpose of entertainment. Brave New World, right? Sexual perversion, drugs, entertainment, bread, circuses, maybe not so much bread, just circuses, right? And meanwhile, the people cannot get back home. But also allowed in to Australia. Been a lot of stars that have been able to come and go freely there. You got Zac Efron, Julia Roberts, Matt Damon, Mark Wahlberg, Idris Elba, Chris Pratt, Natalie Portman, Ed Sheeran, Ron Howard, Tom Hanks, Nicole Kidman, of course, is from Australia. But she can get home. These other people can't. This is a story from Rebel News. This, folks, and when you look at the number of restrictions that are coming down, July 14th, they reduced it from, they previously allowed 6,000 people a week. They cut that down to 3,000. Sydney usually takes about half of these people. Melbourne's limit was set at 1,000 people a week. In Perth, you can only have 530 people come into the country a week. What is this? Well, this is the climate change hypocrisy. You know, we've seen this for the longest time. These people who jet around the world having these climate change conferences, and using their private jets, right? Doesn't apply to them. These restrictions don't apply to them either. The elitists, and the celebrities are part of that elitist crowd, they will be free to do whatever they wish, go wherever they want. The rest of us will own nothing, and we will go nowhere. And that's the way this thing is rolling out right now. New Zealand Prime Minister, as we go back, LifeSite News reminds us that it was March 19th of last year that she came out when we're talking about Biden and the rest of these people saying, you know, we're going to tell you what to say and what not to say. It was the New Zealand Prime Minister who told the public, we are your single source of truth. We should enshrine that. That is the slogan that really all of these people are saying. That's what the Surgeon General Murphy was saying here. That's what Psaki was saying. Jen Psaki. It's what Biden is saying. It's what all of them are saying. It's what CNN is saying. We are your single source of truth. Shut up. She said on March 19th of last year, she was commenting on the conspiracy theories found on social media in regard to COVID lockdowns, which we now know are totally ineffective. She said, "We will continue to be your single source of truth. Everything else you see, take it with a grain of salt." Well, that historically has been what I take any government pronouncements with. Reporters asked her what such an example of conspiracy theory might be. "Can you give us an example of this?" In response, she avoided the specific point, but she said, just online messages add to anxiety that people need to have. So we will be the source of everything that you need to know. You're a single source of truth. Meanwhile, Republican confidence in science has collapsed as people realize that this is a manipulation. If you go back, according to Gallup poll, when they first asked the question about people's confidence in science back in 1975, at that time, Republicans and Democrats were pretty much identical. Republicans had a little bit more confidence in science than the Democrats did. 72% of Republicans were confident in science, 67% of Democrats. And 73% of independents were confident in science. Now, if you look at this, Republican confidence in science has fallen by 27 percentage points. Democrats' confidence in science has increased by 12 points. Why? Because it's no longer science. It's just a mask for politics. A good example of this, Canadian surgeon Dr. Francis Christian, a former surgeon, a clinical professor at the University of Saskatchewan, interviewed by LifeSite News because he was fired simply because he said we should have informed consent and because he pushed back against vaccines for kids. He said informed consent should not be a controversial principle, said the doctor, said the university professor, Dr. Francis Christian. He said it simply allows the patient or the parents of a child patient to be fully aware of the risks and the benefits of a medical intervention. And if any alternatives exist to this particular medical intervention. He also points out that the push for coronavirus vaccines, even for kids, goes against the call for physicians to first do no harm. Why? As I've said before, these are under emergency authorization. Even their own statistics show that there is no emergency for kids. So you're subjecting them to a non-zero risk for a virus that they have zero risk for. That makes absolutely no sense. He also pointed out hundreds of thousands of lives could have been saved if ivermectin was allowed for use. But just like information, medicine is excluded from us as well. They will push one form exclusively, and they will hide the other treatments. They will ban the other treatments, just as they banned speech. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to continue with this a little bit longer because I haven't had a chance to cover something that I want to say about the big pharmaceutical meds. But I know that that we have APS Radio News and Aftermath FM have other programs that come on. So we're going to sign off and we'll be right back. Stay with us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
All right, and I wanted to continue because, again, today is Freedom Day in the UK. Going back to an article on July the 4th, the New York Post said Boris Johnson will end the UK mask mandate on July 19th, calling it Freedom Day. Again, I do not think they know what that word means. You keep using that word freedom, I do not think you know what it means. And the key thing is we should not need to have people to tell us that we're free. That's the lesson, I think, of Juneteenth. We need to take our freedom, and we will never be free as long as we allow people like Boris Johnson to give it to us and take it from us as at will. Okay, that's not freedom. That is privileges granted to us. As Boris Johnson said back at the beginning of July, with every day that goes by, it's clear to me that all of our scientific advisors, they were very likely to be in a position on July 19th to say that really that is the terminus. And we can go back to life as it was before COVID as far as possible. And I said the reason they were doing that at that time, the reason they made that statement, I said they don't really mean it. They're just responding to the massive protests in London and elsewhere, but just in London. They had, it was widely reported 500,000 people, but most people said it was quite a bit more than that. I mean, just unbelievable, the pictures there, people standing up for this, saying we're not taking this anymore. There wasn't really anything else that Boris Johnson could do. They were going to take it back. So in order to try to stay ahead of the curve, I will give you your freedom. Yes, that's it. Yes, it's all done now. Well, he doesn't mean it. July 19th is our target date. And he goes, but, you know, you still need to wear masks like on a crowded train. It might make sense to wear masks, but it'll no longer be compulsory. People will be able to decide for themselves whether or not to cover their face. Oh, isn't that nice? And there's other things that they graciously decided that they might allow you to. Let's look at what freedom could look like in the UK as of today. Well, you could go to a nightclub, a concert, or a sporting event. You could order drinks from a bar. You could attend a wedding, a funeral, or a life event with an unlimited number of guests. You could worship with an unlimited number of guests. But then there are things that you must not do. You must not leave home if they identify you as part of their test and trace contact tracing. And, of course, they've been putting these things out as one outlet called it a ping-demic, using the phones and other issues to ping people and to track and to trace you. And again, that is just an excuse for them to implement universal, ubiquitous contact or surveillance of people. It's all about that. There's other restrictions that they're putting on people, and it is not truly free. But the interesting thing, I think, about this is that the guy who is the, it's his official title. I don't know what his official title is, but he's the kind of the guru. He's the guy who's running this for Boris Johnson. He's been vaccinated, and then he tested positive. And then they decided that on Freedom Day, they were going to ignore it anyway. But now after they were shamed because he was in contact with Boris Johnson, now Boris Johnson and this guy's name is Rishi Sunak will spend Freedom Day in self-isolation after a speedy U-turn due to backlash over them giving themselves an exemption at first from quarantine. Because that's one of the things that you must not do. You must not leave your home if you've tested positive. Well, they were going to do it anyway. Freedom for me, but not for thee, right? That's typically how these people are. You have James Dellingpole writing out of London for Breitbart. He says, masks are about social control, realizes the leading Tory. And he says, finally. He wrote in the Mail on Sunday, he said, the real purpose is social control. This is a conservative MP saying this. We're 492 days. He finally realized this. And he says, the real purpose is social control. We knew this ahead of time. We knew this was coming out, that this is a virus, a pandemic of political control, the same thing that China had done to its people just because they could, right? And we had people selling it here before it was put in place. They were saying, well, you know, they've got this biometric surveillance around the clock everywhere, all the time. And that's kind of creepy because you're just doing it for political purposes. But, you know, we need to do that here to protect ourselves from this virus. So this is what the leading Tory now says. His name is Brady. He says, the real purpose of social control, to provide a constant reminder to maintain distance from other people, to maintain a state of anxiety that leaves people more likely to comply with restrictions that they might otherwise resist or forget. And then he said this, this is exactly the same approach that the government's behavioral experts on the sinister-sounding advisory group known as SPY-B. That's an acronym. Scientific Pandemic Insights Group on Behaviors, and they call it SPIB-B. They want to put that in your face, that they are spying on you. The powers that be are the spies that be, right? Because the full name of it is the Independent Scientific Pandemic Insights Group. That would be ISPIG on behaviors, right? So it'd be ISPIG-B. But instead, they put it in there as SPY-B. They drop off the I at the beginning and the G on the end so they could point out to you that they're spying on you. They're owning this. They love it. They brag about it. And notice that these people are behavioral experts. I've said, and I continue to say, that the only science involved in this pandemic is behavioral science, psychological manipulation. B.F. Skinner, behavioral science, to take you beyond freedom and dignity. While all of this is perfectly true, says Dellingpole, you have to ask, where has Graham Brady been for the last 16 months, the last 492 days? The same thing I asked about Charlie Kirk last week when he said, well, this is nothing more than an open-air prison that they're setting up. It's like, well, where were you when it was being done by your idol, Trump? That's right. You're grifting off of Trump. You're just a grifter. Just hanging on, clinging on to Trump because Trump equals audience equals money, just like InfoWars. This is, where's Graham Brady been for the last 16 months? And where, for that matter, was the newspaper that published this quote-unquote provocative view as they build it? And that was the Mail on Sunday. He said, Brady is supposed to be the leader of the backbench MPs who hold the government to account. He could have been the principled, fearless leader of the resistance to the most draconian, illiberal, and destructive measures ever inflicted by a British government on its people. And I say the same thing about these Republicans. Whether it is Charlie Kirk and his fundraising organization, or whether it is Rand Paul, where have you people been for the last 492 days? Taking a back bench, taking a back seat to anything and everything that Donald Trump did. You never called him out on this. And even to this day, you got people like Rand Paul out there focusing on very, you know, it's very late, but it's also very measured in their opposition to this. Well, let's oppose masks on airplanes. Let's definitely oppose masks on airplanes. Let's oppose them everywhere. Let's oppose the vaccines. Let's oppose the Trump shots. Let's oppose tens of billions of dollars being given by Trump to the vaccine companies. Let's oppose trillions of dollars being given by governors, Democrat and Republican, and to medical institutions to financially incentivize all of these lies and lockdowns. You didn't oppose that. Still are not really opposing it. He goes on to say, well, we can all agree with every word of Brady's article, which might equally have been titled, The Pope Has Been Found in the Vatican, or Bears Defecate in the Forest. But I still smell a rat, especially since the newspaper that published him also happens to be the most bedwetting, COVID fanatical, on-message organ in the whole of what used to be Fleet Street, which is their journalism euphemism. Masks are no longer good. They're decided because the public have shown themselves sufficiently scaredy-cat and malleable. So now it's on to the next stage of the operation. Jab everyone now. Scapegoat and marginalize and vilify anyone who doesn't want to take those new Trump shots. He didn't call them Trump shots. That's what they are. So now we see that in L.A. County, they're reimposing the mask mandates regardless of vaccination status. The public health official dictator says this is not punishment, it is prevention. However, a reminder that the way you shut this stuff down is with a good local official, especially a county sheriff. Now, I'm not saying the county sheriff is a hero. I don't know everything about this. I don't know anything about this L.A. County sheriff, except he says he won't enforce the new mask mandates. He says this is not backed by science, and I'm not going to enforce it. We're not going to issue any fines. Now, see, they don't have that structure in France. I mean, we're talking about a situation somebody can face up to a $10,000 fine for going into a restaurant without their appropriate vaccine stuff. Passport, 6 months in jail. The owner can get 45,000 euros and a year in jail. It comes down to, are you going to have the people in uniform follow the orders of the Nazis, of the SS, right? Are they going to do it? No, not in L.A., says the sheriff there. So good for him. Alex Villanova says he will not be fining residents who do not comply with the new mask mandate. And more states are blocking mask mandates. Even Gottlieb, who was the FDA guy for Trump, who's now on the board of Pfizer, and let me tell you, that's why he's opposing this. Because if you start putting these mask mandates on, and you can see this from the guy who was a doctor on Fox News that went down to talk to, you know, he did the dog and pony show with Trump down in Washington about vaccines. And, oh, you're going to take it, aren't you? And we need to do this for everybody, you know. And he's gone on with Tucker Carlson many times. He's pushing this, and the point of view of these people in the pharmaceutical industry is we want there to be some incentive. We want the carrot side of this, and we want people to believe that we believe in the vaccine. They got to walk a fine line. They want to say, well, you know, we got a variant now, so now we got to have a new vaccine, a new reason for you to get another jab. But they want you to believe that they know what they're doing, that these jabs work, and so they want to support it from that direction. That's where the cheerleaders on Fox News are coming from, and that's where Gottlieb is coming from, because, again, he's on the board of directors of Pfizer now. Went straight, you know, it's a revolving door, goes straight from the Trump administration back into the big pharmaceutical industry. Meanwhile, the Democrats are so drunk with power, and the people like Leanna Wen, who was the former CEO of Planned Parenthood, hates choice. She loves death. She loves inflicting things on kids. And so she's, you know, she's, no, no, you're going to do what we say. I've got this power. I'm going to take more power. And so that's really where the fight is going on internally on their side. As Babylon Bee points out, L.A. reinstitutes mask mandate amid a concerning spike of freedom. Well, it's not the spike of freedom that we should be concerned about. We should be concerned about the death spike. Because as we're looking at what is happening with these vaccines, this is one of the reasons why I wanted to keep this going a little bit longer, and we'll put this out in the video. We'll probably cut this out separately. You have Dr. Robert Malone, pioneer in the field of mRNA vaccines, credited by most people as being the inventor of the mRNA vaccines. He says this worries me quite a bit. He had filed information. He said, you can't say that they didn't know because I told them not to do this before they approved it. But he says the thing that's now worrying him is the fact that we have a COVID surge in the most vaccinated countries. So the places like Israel, where they've had the most vaccinations, so it's very closely correlated. And we've seen these types of studies done. We had the French epidemiologist who went country by country and looked at two things and said, what is their use of ivermectin and what is the use of the vaccine? And there was absolutely no question that ivermectin just completely eliminated COVID in the country. And you could see it. You know, it might start to go up. They start ivermectin and it goes straight down to zero. And then the vaccines start and it just goes straight up. It's like an impulse. Goes up exponentially, straight up, causing it. And she went one country after the other around the world. She had dozens of countries in Africa, in Asia, in Europe, and Central and South America, you name it. She went to all these different countries, same result everywhere. Ivermectin gets rid of it. The vaccines cause it. We're now seeing this everywhere, seeing this in Israel, as I pointed out before. 40% of the cases, vaccinated people. Only 1% of the cases are people who have previously had, that are unvaccinated who had it before. So natural immunity is providing people protection. The vaccines are not, bottom line. Vaccinated UK health secretary, as I pointed out, tested positive. The three of the Texas Democrats, all of whom were vaccinated, chartered the private jet in violation of the FAA mandates. They flew to Washington, and the left is freaking out because they met with Kamala Harris and the rest of these people. Let me tell you, she doesn't have any concern, nothing to be concerned about. They did the same thing about a year and 3 months ago at the beginning of all this stuff. Remember, we had somebody who tested positive, and they were at CPAC, and it's like, and the left was rejoicing. Say all these conservatives are now going to die. Yeah, it's going to be great. Well, this isn't going to be an issue for Kamala Harris. She has zero risk of this based on her age anyway. And probably the same thing with these Texas Democrats. Three of them, all of them had been vaccinated. Three of them now test positive. As they violated FAA rules, they should have gotten anywhere between a $10,000 and $20,000 fine if they were treated like everybody else. But, of course, they will escape that. And finally, I'll mention this last thing because it just disgusts me. A father of three refused a kidney transplant unless he takes the experimental COVID vaccine, the Trump shots, the untested Trump shots. My big objection with government-controlled health care has not even been whether or not it's more efficient than private health care or the costs, because, again, the costs are folded in so many different ways. They're folded in terms of as it runs through insurance companies, as it runs through the government. And so you make these arguments. I always support the government not controlling anything. And the main reason I control it is not because of an economic argument. It's because of this. Because the government will force things on you. I said that before this happened. I said the government will use this to mandate certain things. Just as I've always said about the FDA. I said if the FDA or the DEA can tell you, these unconstitutional alphabet agencies, if they can tell you what you can and cannot put into your body, they will eventually tell you what you must put into your body. If the government runs health care, it will not only decide the death panels, right? Who gets... At what level do we cut off treatment to you? Well, you won't have any say-so about that. But they will also mandate certain things. And we know that is exactly what is happening. And isn't it ironic, or maybe we should say hypocritical, that this happened under Trump? And that because it was under Trump, the Republicans, from the grassroots to the leadership, sat there silent while health care was taken over by the so-called public health officials. That's it for the broadcast. Thank you for listening.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.